right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin once again here with Dom. Dom, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. As with the rest of the Survivor Maryland fan base, I have been fiending for a new episode for the past week or so. I've been driven to desperation now. Austin's abandoned us. And so in lieu of having anything to watch or panel to watch either, we thought, why not do that ourselves? And hopefully we can find some comfort in that, and other people as well can get a tiny fix of the Survivor Maryland that they're missing out on.
Right. Yeah, it is Monday night on the week that Austin is taking a break before the merge rolls around on Survivor Maryland for a week off. All of us had previously canceled all of our plans to make sure we would be here able to watch the merge tonight, and instead, we're going to get our fix by talking through all of the things, not all of them, but plenty of the things that have happened to this point, and also look ahead a bit at the merge. And joining us, as Dom mentioned, are a couple of our good friends that, at this point, we've known both of these people for years and have actually had the privilege of watching some Survivor Maryland with them in person. I guess let's lead it off with one of our great friends. It is Mel from Mel Got Served, the great at Mel Got Served on Twitter, a big time reality TV blogger, and apparently now a Survivor Maryland super fan. Mel, how's it going?
Oh, so good. So excited. First time, long time, of course. I'm a recent Maryland convert, and you guys were there the first time I watched Survivor Maryland and became instantly hooked despite it being like 1 or 2 a.m. and in the past few weeks have binged all the seasons. So I'm so ready for tonight. I'm so excited to talk about preseason and preparing for the merge.
Excellent. Yeah, very excited to have you here to hear all of what you have to say, having seen all of these seasons so recently and gotten into it. And also with us today is someone who I believe has been a Survivor Maryland fan for a little longer than that. Another person who was there with us to watch the All-Stars premiere in Boston at Podcast House recently. Welcome. I guess this is his first appearance on the actual Dom and Colin podcast main feed, but certainly a regular, if not the breakout star over on Twitch with Social Strategy Sunday that Taryn Armstrong's always doing over on Twitch. Welcome to the podcast, Charles Kurz. Charles, how you doing?
It's great to be on, finally. I hope I live up to the hype of the four people who know who I am. excited to talk about Survivor Maryland, as we do every week, but it's nice to actually do it on podcast form. I'm glad you guys finally took the risk of having me on. And I don't know if it's going to pay off for you, but it should be fun.
it's a high-risk maneuver, but no gamble, no future, Charles.
Absolutely. We all love to gamble here. So. Yeah.
What's your background as a fan of Survivor Maryland?
My background is I had no idea what it was until two podcast houses ago when Austin was there and sleeping on the couch. And I was like, who is this person? And everyone was like, oh, he's the Survivor Maryland guy. I was like, what is Survivor Maryland? I have no idea what's going on right now. And then I went back and listened to your guys' podcast where you originally talked about it. And from there, I kind of just, I guess, talked to Austin about it and became hooked. And I got to say, I could not be more excited to make my podcast debut on Survivor Maryland. It's just maybe the best show on TV right now, and I'm a lot of takes I'm ready to share.
Well, we are excited and slightly nervous to have you on here with us sharing all of those. Now, Mel, you are a much more recent convert to the Survivor Maryland cause, but you have been making up for lost time going back and watching all the old seasons. So take us through your backstory quickly.
So I met up with everybody at Podcast House and we were hanging out and everyone was like, did you watch Survivor Maryland yet? And I had to confess that I hadn't watched it before and I hadn't really watched fan ones. I've participated in a fan one and was getting ready for another one. So I figured I'll watch with the group and enjoy it, and immediately was like, could not stop watching. I probably have forgotten all real TV outside of maybe The Bachelor and sadly X on the Beach for the last few weeks to just watch Survivor Maryland nonstop when I can. I've been downloading it to my phone to like prep. I'm super into it now. I am obsessed. It is so good. And I've been telling every person I know who watches Survivor that they need to be watching it.
That's awesome. What, how would you, in marathoning all of these seasons back to back, how would you rank the seasons up leading up to All Stars? Did you have a particular favorite out of the group?
It is a Sophie's Choice. I don't know how to really rank them because they are all so good in all different ways and not in like this totally different of like other things. I kind of now am ranking them maybe just in order as they are 2, 3, 4. And I usually don't use finales as a way to justify a good season or not. You know, there's plenty of good and bad Survivor seasons with good winners and bad winners, But I do think that two, I think, had a really strong final two, even if Senti's going to Senti. So I think I'm going 2, 3, 4. And that's only because 4's final three was a little iffy here and there. But I do love the results of 4. So I just can't really choose. And you could probably argue me into changing my rankings anytime, any day.
Yeah. Charles, what about you? Any particular season stand out for you?
I mean, I think I rank them 2, 4, 3. And that's just because the gameplay for me is just so great on 2. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit as we're kind of discussing All-Stars as well. 4 is just such an enjoyable season. It's you know, seeing Austin come into his own in editing and how the story is told and all the depth of characters is just fantastic. And 3, don't even get me wrong, is it would be a top tier Survivor season for me, but as Mel said, the end is a little unsatisfying for me, and unlike her, that kind of does leave a bad taste in my mouth on retrospect for seasons for me, whether that's kind of a good thing or not and how I view seasons. But obviously you get some moments in 3 that you've never seen on reality TV before that are just so real, and that makes it incredible in its own way as well.
So, Charles, one thing in there you said was that you get to watch Austin develop as a host and as a producer over time. Let's touch on that quickly, because for him, as he's doing this in real time, this is a process, a slow process over the course of multiple years. Whereas for us, going back and binging all the seasons, we see that just rapidly over the course of 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. So what do you make of like Austin as a fledgling host still back in the start of season 2 versus where he is now in All-Stars, the master of all he surveys?
Yeah, I think that's part of what makes Survivor Maryland so great, is that you get the character development and you get all these story arcs that, you know, you just don't see in normal Survivor because they just don't have time to flesh out the characters this well. But you also see the development of how the story is told. Season 2 is very on the nose, and there are some tribals that you're surprised by, and the gameplay is just so shocking that you just can't help but be like, how did that happen? How did that come about? Obviously the Connor vote and a couple of others. But when you get to season 3 and season 4, you can start really seeing the three threads of these story arcs and how they develop and how they really impact the season. And that just kind of speaks to where Austin's kind of gotten. And, you know, as a host, I think he also has improved a lot. I think he started off kind of letting the players do their own thing, and he's kind of molded into somebody who does focus on that, but also as a way to kind of lead them in a way that creates better entertainment for everybody.
Austin, I think, fits right in with the Jeff Probst, Julie Chen, Chris Harrison, reality TV hosts that don't age kind of group where, we were watching, we're sitting like literally right next to Austin, and the clips of him from 3 years ago, he looks like identical. He looks exactly the same. It's amazing.
I think he drank that Tuck Everlasting water, and he'll just be eternally that cool RA hosting Survivor Maryland for life.
Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced he's not still an RA, to be fair.
Yeah, let's check back in 15 years and see how everyone's doing then. But Mel, same thing for you, because you started with All-Star. So you see Austin in his prime. You see maybe the most up-to-date and the most refined season. And so going back and watching these seasons from scratch, was it a little jarring seeing them kind of work through those initial kinks?
It was actually really wasn't. I noticed a few things here and there, but overall it really didn't throw me off. It just really showed just how impressive it also has been that, this has been over a few years. So, even like technology's gone better. It's just when I saw the first All-Stars, I was just shocked at like the level of cinematography to it. It's just so well done. And I think that's where people probably have this perception that people are just taking their cameras and sitting around. It's nothing and it's going to be everything kind of crummy, but it's so well done that you can just see the amount of passion and time that Austin's put into it. It's so impressive.
Yeah. Did you have any kind of reluctance at all, Mel? I guess you wouldn't voice it when we kind of were peer pressuring you into watching your first episode among the group, but did it take getting used to for you as you were starting a new season, meeting these new characters who were just college kids you'd never heard of, and they're not on an island and they're not starving or anything like that? Or were you able to buy in pretty quickly to the premise here?
At first, it's a little weird. And also because, like I said, I played once and it's kind of still like it's not the same. But it's the elements of the game of Survivor as opposed to the whole aspect of Survivor, the survival part of it. But it was a little weird first because I just haven't seen it. I'm just kind of a person that, I'm not like a casual, but I'm a pretty deep fan, but I haven't gone maybe too deep. So it was a little like dipping my toe in. But once I started immediately, I was super hooked. The characters got me right away. And I think everyone knows that I have an immediate session Thomas. With my man, Chris T. Yeah, Chris Thomas.
This is a Chris T pot. I'm on board.
Oh, yeah. We love Chris T. If you don't like Chris T, just turn off the podcast now because you're going to hate me.
Yeah, I'm totally with that. I think all four of us are going to be voicing a similar sentiment. You never know with Dom. Dom might throw in a curveball later on.
No, how dare you? I am
being contrarian.
I am an apostle of Chris T as well, although he is a fairly polarizing figure, so Mel may have just lost us half of our listeners here with that one statement.
It's true. I understand. Listen, I see both sides of it, but I just know that I love him. I can't help it.
Yeah, well, one thing that you hit on that, to me, I think is, for me, one of the most like fundamental things when I'm talking about Survivor Maryland, when I'm, you know, I'm going full Colin Stone hype mode on Twitter, where Mel, I thought it was interesting, like, because I'm totally in the same camp with you, where what makes Survivor Survivor to me, and frankly, this is something I've thought a lot about recently, on the heels of like the ending of season 35 and the fire challenge now being a regular thing and the rumored twists for season 38. To me, Survivor is Survivor because of the social element of this is the group of people, you're going to vote them out, and then you're going to need them to vote for you in the end. And to me, I don't care if they're on an island, if they're in the North Pole, or if they're in a mansion, or on the campus at the University of Maryland, as long as that is the backbone of the show, I'm going to find it interesting. And I'm totally with you, Charles. Like, while I obviously understand that this is partially being shot literally on, like, iPhones, and that it's not the same kind of production budget going into the challenge or production going into the episodes, I think that this could totally hang with virtually any season of actual Survivor when it comes to what is important to me from the Survivor perspective. And it sounds like, Charles, you're on board with that as well.
Yeah, like when you just kind of prompted me and asked me that question where I'd rank the Survivor Maryland seasons, it kind of, my head started spinning towards just what I think about the seasons and why I like them so much. And I immediately went to Real Survivor. And I think even the worst Survivor Maryland season, which in my opinion is season three, like I said, just because the ending is still probably better than anything we've gotten from CBS in multiple seasons.
Yeah.
And, you know, how far back that goes is a debate for another time, but or maybe later in the podcast. But, and I think that speaks exactly to, you know, the simple formula of, you care about the characters. The reaction people have, you know, even when we were in Podcast House together and we were on the first challenge of All Stars, and then they came down to the wire and everybody absolutely freaked out. You know, that would never happen in Survivor. It's like, oh, another challenge. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. But with Survivor in Maryland, it doesn't matter who you're rooting for, you're so invested in that character that you just care so much, and that's what makes it so amazing.
There's just so many characters to be invested in, and I think that what Austin's doing a great job is telling everybody's story. If you ask me, like, half of Ghost Island's cast, and I think for everybody, we can say that there were a lot of people who are non-existent, and really the purple edit, so to say, really doesn't exist on Survivor Maryland. And it actually reminds me of, I know we've all talked about over time, especially you guys, Dom and Colin, that, you know, something that Survivor missed sometimes is that because they're trying to set up these blind sides and shocking things, that you get to tribal council and just something happens out of the blue and we never understand how it came to be. And we talk about, like, why not make it like The Genius where you flash back to show it? But Maryland gets into those details before we get there. So even if it is a blindside, we know it's coming and we're still blindsided, even though we knew this was part of the plan.
And we see with Shubal handing over the fake idol a few weeks ago that Austin is experimenting with that genius style editing now. But you're right. By and large, you just don't really have the same purple edits, the same people just dropping off the face of the earth. In the early seasons, you have a few names who you have to think about.
Queen
have
Carla.
Your memory. Queen Carla,
yes,
of course.
Yes, Purple Carla. What a, yeah. I joke that she was like, whatever is the deepest shade of purple imaginable was Carla. Sorry, Carla, if you are listening to this.
And then there are some people who should have been the stars of the show but got robbed for some reason, like my boy Alan. But other than that...
Free Alan!
But for the most part, it's... Everyone gets a decent edit, and you can take it on good faith that when someone doesn't, there's a good reason for that. It's not because Austin is deciding to just shaft them for no reason. It's because for that period of time or for that storyline, they just didn't really fit in. And it's so nice to be able to give them credit and be able to believe that, rather than they took a risk on Libby and Jenna and so on, and then they just never bothered to put them on screen again.
I think that the timing aspect of that is a huge part of it too. It's exposure, but it's also timing. When we the problem with CBS Survivor is that when someone's exposure picks up, you know that, A, either the game's going to start revolving around them or they're going home in the next episode or two. And I think that we'll talk about, you know, what we think is going to happen going forward, but a lot of our reads are going to be off because Austin does throw in the thing where he just increases someone's exposure for an episode because, you know, that was the most interesting content for that episode and not necessarily because that story is most necessarily going to play out in the next episode or two. And I think that makes it so much more intriguing because then you have to follow down the line and say, oh, this person got this content in the past. Where is this going to play into the story and at what point? And I think that makes it, you know, so much harder to follow and so much better to watch.
Yeah, I'm totally with that. I think let's dive into the season, this all-star season that we've been watching play out for these last couple of months now at this point. And actually, it's crazy to think that it's already flown by so much to that extent that we've already lost 9 people, I guess, now. But Charles, I guess we can start with you just because Mel didn't have a great frame of reference prior to watching the All-Stars premiere. But when you just knew who the cast was going to be, who were you the most excited to see coming back for a second shot here on Survivor Maryland?
I would say Chris LeCompte was a clear number one for me. Combination of character, gameplay, the way that he went out in season two was a little bit unsatisfying for me. And just that, you know, it felt a little bit like it was his game to lose. And when that happens, I always want to see that person back. You know, it's the Malcolm 1.0. It's that kind of a story arc where that person, you know, does everything right for a huge period of time and then something happens where they make a mistake or two in the final stretch of the game and they don't win the game. So getting to see someone like that back is automatically going to be near the top of my list. I'll say Victoria. We could talk about what's going to be going on this season. I think that she's been really interesting to kind of see how her story arc has developed this season. But, you know, on her original season, I thought she was an absolutely fantastic player and was really excited to see what she would do as 2.0 and how she was perceived as and how she would play as coming in as a really big threat. Everyone, but, you know, those two for me really stuck out because of the, you know, them coming in as huge threats and how they would react and how good players they were their first time around.
Yeah,
I was going to say, Mel, you kind of get the opposite question of who stood out to you as you were watching All-Stars and then made you excited to go back and watch them in their initial seasons? And were there any people who either stood out more or less than you expected when you went back and watched their first innings?
So obviously, as I said, Chris T stuck out because we watched episode one and then we got to watch episode two because we were, you know, with the host. And him talking about that flask cracked me up. But then I really just feel like everybody else in watching now, and that's why I've been starting sort of a rewatch of All-Stars, is that now that I've binged the last few seasons and I know everybody's context to understand now, like, that they're back, who's popping now more than they were. So someone like Micah in All-Stars, I've felt has kind of been a little low-key up until the last couple of episodes, but watching him in Guts and Glory, I thought he was a really great character. I don't know necessarily he was the greatest gamer, but I really just enjoyed him. So I have like a newfound love for Micah. And then everyone was talking about Faluke, who was not in the premiere. Spoiler, she's now here. But I needed to find out like what was the legend of Faluke. And so I started watching with Terrapin Trials because I needed to understand like why was everyone talking about Faluke, Faluke and Victoria. I wanted to know the whole context. And so when I knew Faluke was coming back, that was my, like, I need to binge this all immediately so that I know in a week the full context of their drama.
And yeah, did that live up to the hype for you, the tale of Faluke?
Oh, she is amazing, but what a soul-crushing thing to watch a friendship kind of crumble on a pole in the middle of the courtyard of your campus. It was hard, and I do wish that they could have gotten to the, you know, all-girl final two. Obviously it could have been a more satisfying ending, I think, if that became the final two, regardless of who won between them.
Are you saying that King Terry isn't the best player in Survivor Maryland history?
Oh boy. I did find out that the fraternity that King Terry was pledging is in fact a business fraternity that I am a brother in, because regardless of gender, we are all brothers. And so I guess Terry and I are distant fraternity brothers in our business fraternity.
Yeah, that scene at the end of Terrapin Trials is one of the most emotionally resonant scenes in any season of Survivor that I've seen in years. And that's despite the fact that it's in at just a university campus when they haven't been starving for months on end, and they haven't spent weeks away from their families, and there's not $1 million on the line. It's just pride, and I guess if there's some unofficial prize there or whatever. And yet, despite all of that, you still get this incredibly powerful moment that CBS Survivor wishes it could recapture.
You know how hard they'd be hyping that moment too. That's the problem. They'd be pitching it before the season even started within promos. That moment is coming up, and no, you'll Probst see the most shocking moment. Yeah. I love this season because of the shocking moment that happens at the final three when they're both standing on a pole at the final challenge.
Yeah, but Melk, I think your experience with some of the Guts and Glory players is mirrored by the other people who came to this season and then went back and started, because you watch All Stars and that cast has really underperformed so far, mostly. So Alex Pascal goes out first. Brandon is a fun character for the time that he's there, but he's gone pretty quick as well. And then like Michelle's gone. You have the Soka trio left in the game, but Micah's barely there. Evan is more of a comedic figure than a game player, at least recently, instead of the first few episodes. And then Shannon, I think, is the only one from that season who I think is on most people's radar as a contender to win and one of the big schemers left in the game. But other than that, it's that cast has not really done themselves any favors.
Right. I think you may be able to make a case, maybe not after the most recent episode, but prior to last week, I almost would have bought Shubal by himself representing season one, having more winner equity than everyone from season four combined.
I strongly disagree with that take, obviously, which I think, you know, I've been waiting to get into, but I think that we got to really analyze Shubal's game on it as a, where is he now? What has he done to put himself there, and where is he going? And really analyze his moves and separate it from the edit. Because I think, obviously, he's an absolutely fantastic reality TV character. He's unbelievably likable. He's just so fun to have on the season. But I think if you really strip down and look at his moves and the position that he's in the game, I really question if he's even a decent Survivor player. And then I think we can get more into the specific moves as we talk about more about the story of what's happened this season. But I think for me, he's pretty close to zero equity to win the game. And I think Shannon's pretty high up on my list. And I think
Shannon's
that's kind of true
super
even before,
high for me.
Yeah, even before this episode. So I think that, you know, that's, I get why you say that, because I think a lot of people do have Shubal high due to the edit, but I strongly disagree with that.
I definitely would come away back completely off of that take at this point. And frankly, I guess spoiler alert on like my eventual like equity rankings or whatever, Shannon she's certainly in the conversation for the number one spot for me right now, and Jordan is not. But prior to this last week and prior to losing Sabrina, I guess you are right that it was probably largely because of just how big of a character and how entertaining he'd been and how just the frequency with which things had happened to break his way. But there certainly is some room for not even nitpicking, some room for outright like criticism of some of the things potentially Shubal has gone and done here this season so far. Mel, what do you think about how Shubal has gotten himself to this merge?
Shubal is playing hard. I feel like he's making the moves that Christie always is trying to make those huge moves, but Shubal's actually doing them. And for a while I thought, man, Shubal's got this, but he's just starting to appear too much now. Once Faluke started to catch on to him and then Shannon caught him in the lie last week, it seems like this is kind of the downward spiral for him, which makes me nervous because I've really enjoyed Shubal as a character, as a player, even though maybe the moves aren't maybe the smartest ones, they're at least entertaining for us to watch.
I think that goes back a lot further. Even his early moves of the season. I think the first two episodes he was really fantastic with the Alex G stuff and the way he positioned himself with Chris LeConte and Evan and all of them as, you know, the swing vote, but not necessarily a swing vote, and just in a position where he wasn't making power and could hide behind all these huge targets. And he even talked to Alex and was like, and to Chris T, and he was talking about Chris T. He was like, Chris T's an idiot. He wants to make a big move now. And then, like, two episodes later, Shubal's making 1,000 unnecessarily big moves, literally an episode or two after he critiqued Chris T for trying to make a move when Chris T was in a bad position in the game. So, I think I have some serious questions about pretty much every move he's made in the game post the first couple of votes where I thought he positioned himself really well.
Well, I think
it seems like he... it seems like maybe he risked his game a little too much for the partner twist, which is awesome and fun. But I think he really put his neck out there for Sabrina in a case that seemed like she was probably drawing dead on the new shuffled tribe that she's on.
Yeah, he went to such great lengths to save her and gave us some amazing TV in the process, but ultimately only bore her one or maybe two more rounds. So ultimately, where's that going to get him? And it is interesting because you can see from those early episodes that he does have the ability to play that behind the scenes, under the radar game, where he lets those big names go at it while he's quietly gathering his own troops and just making sure everyone can trust him and feel good about him. And then he just blows all of it up to start playing this hyper aggressive game. So I love that he can play every single aspect. And I don't know if it's smart to go the route he's chosen, but either way, he's a fantastic character. I think a very promising player, even if you disagree with the line he's taking. And I'm just so excited to see the rest of his journey this season, even if that means everyone ganging up on him at the merge, which I think is a real possibility here.
Right. I mean, Schubel comes into the season saying, my game is getting idols, winning individual challenges once that becomes a thing, which, spoiler alert, it's about to now that we hit the merge. And I think that another big piece of that is he really does like just making the big moves and having things go his way at basically everyone else's expense. And while that may not always make for it may not always be the most effective way to improve his position entering the following round, it's certainly going to be something I'm always going to be rooting for and hoping he stays on the episodes for as long as possible. I mean, some of our favorite players, particularly over on like the genius front, are people who seem to mess with everyone's plans just for the hell of it. And it seemed like it, from time to time, at least, worked out all right for them. But Charles, it sounds like you have really come down after those early couple of episodes on Schubel. Are you willing to say Jordan Schubel is drawing dead at this point?
Well, I was going to say, I think we talked about the two things on the Sabrina thing. I think absolutely I agree with you guys on that, but I think you also have to go back to the Michelle vote. And I think that there's some really good logic to why Schubel voted out Michelle, but I think you also have to think about the utility of the strategic move that he made. And he put himself in a really upfront position when he made that move. Even if it works out seamlessly, he's the one making that move. And when you make a move like that, and when you're putting yourself in that position, you really have to be sure of your allies that are on board to make that move. And I don't think he was in that position at all. I think there were plenty of people that he was making that move with that were not comfortable with making that move. And by doing that, that created the beginning of suspicion around him, which is then snowballed while he's continued to make huge moves by trying to save Sabrina. And I think the other interesting talking about with the Schubel Sabrina stuff is, I think everybody is kind of overrating the power this twist might have, right? I mean, obviously it's huge to be in a position to get these immunities when being the last partner left, but to what end, right? If you really position yourself properly, you shouldn't need to be in a position to need that twist. And blowing up your game like Schubel has, or like other people potentially might coming up in the merge, which we'll talk about, for that twist, it's I see why people are falling into that trap, but I think the really good players are going to be kind of cognizant of that and steer clear of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it may be the case that the pair's twist, sorry, Dom, is almost like a this is not an advantage situation where, yes, correct, it will be good for whoever gets it, but the steps that you'll take to get to that point may put you in a really rough situation once you're out of the advantage stage.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting that I think I understand the temptation to try and secure Alex G as this side deal, if you like, that no one else knows about, and that no one else has anything going with Alex G. So his loyalty is only to you. And same thing with Sabrina. So if you have a solid alliance and you have these plus ones dotted around everywhere, that's a great spot to be in. But it seems like in order to do that, he's had to alienate everyone else that he used to be working with. So instead of having his six and adding two to that, he's traded in that six for these outsiders who, because they're outsiders, can't really do anything on his behalf to help him if he's in a rough spot. So I think he might have played himself into a corner, but the beauty of Schubel is he's capable of playing himself out of it. So I'm very excited to see that. So Charles, one thing you said in there was that people are overrating the impact of this twist and the effect it's going to have on the game. I agree in terms of the power that the twist has and the reward for making sure that you're the last best standing. But in terms of the impact on the game as it's being played, this it's hard to overstate the amount of power that it seems to be having, because everyone is just getting themselves in these contortions to identify who their partner is and try and help them and try and make sure they have that immunity. And it feels like so much of the craziness that's happened so far never would have happened if it wasn't for that twist. So I know when Austin announced the idea ages ago now, I thought, okay, that's a cool idea. I'm excited to see how that plays out. But even before it's ended now, I think we can safely say this was a masterstroke of a twist. Like, it's the twist is fair. Like, it's not something which is just randomly planted in the game and is going to mess everything up. But it's predictable and yet also completely unpredictable, and people finding ways to push and poke and examine all of the corners of it. So it's working out absolutely perfectly, and I'm sure Austin, as this was happening, was thrilled at how the twist was playing out.
Dom, I totally agree. In the Survivor weekend, we had actually started watching Survivor Maryland, and I'd messaged our host saying, I hope you're watching. I was like, I feel like the partner twist is really cool. And so, inspired by Survivor Maryland, the partner twist was added into our game. And for a lot of people, they weren't playing for partners, but I knew this was something that, from watching Maryland, I could use to my advantage ideally. And I made this whole kind of master spreadsheet to really try to, you know, are you the one, deduce who the partners are, and figure it out. And it was about at the merge where I was already booted. We don't need to get into that. But at the merge point, I noted, based on all the information I'd gotten throughout the game at that point, that there were three partners left in the game, or three pairs. And it was a huge deal that once they started to eliminate them, because when it got down to it, I believe they got immunity at six, and that put three people immune at the time, I think, is what we were at, six or seven, and half the group was immune. And it will play a big part in the game, and somebody might get screwed because of these pairs.
So I couldn't agree more with what Dom said, but I think it brings up an interesting discussion that we can all talk about, and I'd love to hear what you guys think about what is the optimal way to play the partner's twist. I think people have kind of started to catch on the idea that maybe it's the way Victoria's played it. Maybe you just don't say anything, and maybe leading Christine in the dark is optimal for their game, because no one can leverage that against them or whatever it is. And I think a lot of people, Shubor, or Victoria, or whoever, have tried to deceive who their partner is, and I think that is smart. But, you know, what line would you guys take, and what do you think, as we've seen this play out, is the optimal line to take here to position yourself for the twist?
It sounds like a cop-out, but I think part of why the twist works so well is it truly is dependent on who your partner is. The right way to play it, if your partner's Chris Thomas versus if your partner's Chris Acompt, you can't just go in there with a one-size-fits-all kind of attitude, because that's going to get you in real trouble. So it's this wrinkle to the game that each individual person has to determine their own response to. And you know, you can imagine someone messing up that twist, or the twist going very well for them, where if they just take a different name out of the hat on that first day, then the entire game and their response to it is completely different.
Oh, I mean, imagine if Sabrina draws anyone other than Shubal. I mean, these episodes, at the very least, and probably the whole layout of the game would look a lot different right now if they weren't trying so hard to get that advantage to fall into their pair. And I was thinking during these early episodes that those two, the hashtag Shubrina duo, would be the front runners to get it, just because it seemed like we were seeing so much of them understanding how important this could be and really wanting to work together and really being a cohesive unit, compared to Victoria completely unwilling to even tell Chris Thomas that they were partners, and her essentially saying, I would rather have no shot at it myself than give Chris Thomas any chance at it. I think I may be coming around now. Like, obviously it's not going to be Jordan and Sabrina. I think we may have been getting totally set up by Austin the whole time, and it is that approach of not worrying so much about it that will potentially be the one that works out. And I think it would be amazing if it was in fact Victoria and Chris Thomas who ended up getting this twist, which I think actually could be very realistic.
Oh, I'd love that. I actually think the people are playing it best right now, at least, are Holly, Chris Lecomte, Shannon and Eric, because it really brought together an alliance that might not have happened fully. And I think that when I was thinking of the partner twist would be, how do you get a group that matches up and aligns with it? And I know in the game when I was playing at my friend's house, that when I figured out that half of my tribe were my friend's partners, I was more apt to try to save those people as opposed to the others that I didn't know their partners, because at least I knew who they were with and who I might be able to get a larger alliance with, as opposed to one or two new people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. The only issue is what we're going to see coming up here is that when you make that four-person, even if it's a six-person alliance with three duos, you know, they have to turn on each other to get the twist, right? So, you know, that only works to a certain point, and then now you're sitting in an alliance where you put all this time and effort into building and formulating and nurturing this alliance of four or six or whatever it is, and now you're at a point where there's three votes left to get a power, and you need to basically use every single vote to take out the other side.
And that's going to be fun to watch, though.
And that's going to be fun to watch, but, you know, it's not – I don't know if that's the optimal strategy. And I to Colin's earlier point, I think Victoria and Christy are pretty heavily favored here. Unless Victoria goes – I mean, I think if Victoria survives the next couple of votes, I think they're both in it for the long haul. And we can get more into the edit a little bit later, but I really think that the way that her edit's picked up is kind of what I talked about with the timing of everything. In a normal Survivor season, you would say, oh, she's guaranteed to be the merge boot or the merge whatever, the second episode boot or the merge double episode. And I think a lot of people who have been tweeting about the season or talking about the season do think that because of that. But if you follow kind of the through threads of how Survivor Maryland's been in the past, it's really not been that way at all in terms of spike edit and et cetera. So I think Victoria actually is just getting content because she's starting to come into her own in the game and potentially to set up her story when they do win with the partner twist.
Right. I mean, one of the most important things for any Survivor player to bear in mind, no matter what version of of Survivor they're playing, is sometimes the right move is to just lay low.
Absolutely.
That's what Alex G's doing.
G stands for genius, or so I'm told. So let's talk about Victoria quickly, because she's someone who, coming into the season, I was more excited to see than almost anybody else out there. And she really hasn't done anything or been able to do anything thus far. I think we made this comparison when talking about Survivor, but it felt very much like Aubrey on Game Changers, where it's coming in, like no one wants to play with her, and even trying to make a move is just going to increase the target on her back. So she ends up just being the spectator to what's going on. And for Victoria's part, it felt like she wasn't having that much fun before Faluke came in, and then that twist just, I think, did a number on her entire will to play the game and her attitude towards it. So I don't know where she really stands, and I hope she can find some traction and really get herself back in there as a player. But for now, it's been disappointing to watch her not get to do anything.
It would be incredible if the Faluke coming into the game, I guess if we want to call that a twist, almost played for Victoria the same way that this partner's twist might, in the event where not even attempting to make it work with Chris Thomas, could end up still going their way. It would be amazing if Austin sets it up when Faluke returns and Victoria's freaking out and isn't thrilled about this new development in the game, if later on down the line, Faluke somehow is like the swing vote that saves Victoria's life at some point.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen. That's what my read on the edit is going to be. I think they're all going to – I think that Holly, Victoria, and Faluke – by the way, is this the first time we mentioned Holly? I think this might be the first time Holly.
Yeah, other than in the partners alliance, yeah.
Which, you know, 48 minutes of me without mentioning Holly is, you know. Anyway, so I think those three girls are really going to – the next phase of the game is kind of in their hands. Just the bonds that all of them built and the different kind of sub-alliances that they're all in, I think that's where a lot of the cross-section of the merge really is. We've seen a lot of Victoria and Holly talking about how they now trust each other, and I think that story has to play out in a certain way that really benefits all three of those girls. So I think those three are in for a very long haul and could ultimately decide the next couple of boots at the merge, whoever that may be, which I assume we'll talk about in a bit. Which is all, by the way, is one of the best outcomes ever of that if those three girls are a tight alliance or any combination of Faluke and Victoria together would just be one of the greatest story arcs in Survivor history.
Yeah, I'm totally with that. Dom, what do you think about the possibility of those two potentially linking up? Is that in play for you?
It is in play, and I'm here for it. I would love it if Victoria's entire story on the season is basically frozen out of the game for 8 weeks, comes in, somehow backdoors into the immunity with a partner who she didn't even want in the first place, and then gets saved by Faluke. That would be a great story to go out on.
Victoria would deserve it, by the way. Victoria's been so resilient between her first season and the beginning of this second season. I would love to see Victoria finally have all the breaks go her way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, all right. So that's going to be a lot of fun to track for sure. Charles, you brought up Holly, and I guess now is as good a time as any to let you pontificate about all that you love about Holly and how great she's been doing. Are you standing by that, just your pregame standing and feeling like she's continuing to deliver to the level you had hoped?
Absolutely. I don't know if she's my clear runaway number one win equity person, as she's been for most of the season. I think there's other people that are in the mix, and kind of what I love about this season so much is, other than, you know, I think four or five people who have gotten just pretty much, for me, no shot to win the game from day one, like the Evans and the Kings and maybe the Ashley and a couple other people who really have never been in the mix for me, and most of those other people are probably already out of the game, like the Sierras and whatnot. The rest of the win equity board for me has kind of shifted around a lot as we go. And I think Colin touched on that with Chubal. So, you know, I think she's definitely in that top tier with me. And I think that what we kind of forget is that the whole story of the pre-merge on that girls tribe was that alliance of five that kind of fell apart because of the Sierra situation and then the swap. But I think that's really going to come into play. And I think Holly is going to be at the forefront of that. And I think we saw, you know, the kind of the brilliance of her game in that Rebecca vote, is you see that Rebecca voted up, but in her final words, Rebecca talked about the people that she was rooting for to win the game now that she's left, that she's gone. And the only person that didn't vote with her that she mentioned was Holly. And I think that kind of shows all the little things, connections that Holly's made in the game. And I think she made a lot of those in her smaller tribe in her first time out. And now she's expanded that to a broader sense of people who aren't necessarily in her tight alliance or might not necessarily be in her plans down the line, like Rebecca. And that's going to give her social capital and the people she needs to make a move when she needs to make a move, which I think is coming up potentially at this vote.
Yeah, Mel, what do you think of how Holly's been doing to this point?
So, like Charles, I'm a huge Holly fan, and she's one of my top players this season, and I think that she really is a top contender right now to win, and I think that her bond with the girls, with Cannon, I really feel like a girls' alliance is possible this time around, and I think that right now she's only on one person's radar, and that's Eric. He seems to be the only one that's not that trusting of her, but everybody else seems to really be fine with her, and the fact is that she's Chris Lacombe's partner, and if he's sort of the one running everything, he wants that twist and he wants that advantage, and so she's not going anywhere, at least for a while.
Yeah, I feel like Holly has certainly been one of the most fun characters for me this season, and one of the people I have, frankly, the highest expectations for going forward. It seems like even in the spots where things don't go exactly how she had hoped for, she's at least able to recover from them relatively quickly, and I feel like in that kind of this pairs alliance that I expect to continue being a thing post-merge with Holly, Shannon, LeCompte, and Eric King, I would guess that if they ever become like the big target for the rest of the group, I feel like Holly is going to be probably down the list as far as the people they're going to be the big group's going to be gunning for right away. So I'm really loving Holly's spot, frankly, here at the merge, and particularly in the hands of someone that I personally would consider to be a very capable survivor player. Dom, what do you think about how Holly's been doing?
Yeah, I've really come around on Holly, which isn't to say that I didn't like Woo! Her coming in, but. There you go, Charles. You're welcome. But I didn't quite see what it was that made her so effective the first time around, because she was touted as this big jury threat that Victoria wanted to make that move in order to take out. But this time, you can really see that on display, that she just is in good with everyone, as far as we can tell. And that craziness with the whole Eric vote that almost was but then wasn't because of Senti, that kind of exposed her a little bit, but so many people were just swept up in that tornado that I don't think she in particular is going to be getting too much backlash from that.
Everyone could just blame the booze on that anyways, because that was the drunkest, greatest tribal council ever.
Right. Every single tribal, both on Survivor Maryland and just on Survivor, should have copious amounts of alcohol, if you ask me, just because if this is anything to go by, it always leads to fireworks.
Well, a quick sidebar question that I'm not sure when else would come up, but I'd love to hear each of your guys' opinions on this, if you have an answer at the top of your mind. what would you guys say has been the best episode of this season so far? I guess, Charles, does anything jump out to you?
Yeah, so I think the three-episode stretch, ending with the most recent episode, it was just some of the best Survivor I've ever seen. And I mean, I think the most memorable episode was probably the Eric Chris Lacombe, the one where, you know, the split vote. But I think that the last two, in terms of just full edit, character, story arc, everything, have just been just as good, in my opinion. I can tell you that I think my favorite episode, I think the Connor vote is one of my favorite episodes in the history of the show, of Survivor in general. So, you know, going back a little bit, I think Austin once put out a poll of, like, what's your favorite Tribal Council or episode in Survivor Maryland, and I think that one just stands out to me, as well as obviously the Rocks episode and a couple others, but that one in particular, I think, is just the way it played out, the way it was edited, and the level of gameplay, and, you know, everything that Chris LeCompte did there was just some of the best Survivor I've ever seen.
Yeah, Mel, how about you? Any particular episodes stand out?
I have to say Drunk Tribal Council. The lead up to that was so exciting that, to be honest, there are times where it feels like the Soka Trio plus Chris LeCompte are kind of running this and people are handing it to them. And I understand keeping around these targets and, you know, this kind of masterful way that Chris LeCompte has to get everyone to think they're his number one, kind of like Sarah Lucina. He's pretty amazing at that. But to see this sort of plan come together and that for all people that it's Senti that's kind of instigating this and getting everyone together and it's happening behind the scenes, but then everyone's really drunk because it's 2 o'clock in the morning because it's a genius idea to have tribal council that late. And then it just all goes to shit. And it's so entertaining. And it was just a really fun back half hour of the episode to see everyone kind of scrambling and relying on text and phone. And it's just not working out. But then even after that, all the Shubrina stuff that's going on, it's just really hard to pick one episode because it's just sort of been on this nonstop momentum of entertainment.
Yeah, and now, Dom, I'm sure you give me your edgelord take on how actually the Ryan boot was the best episode of the season or something like that.
I'm saving all my contrarianism for later, but to me, the mark of a great season is not just having these high highs, which most seasons have, if we're lucky, but also the episodes where not too much is happening that add to this transition between those big moments are also engaging. And I think the success of this season and of Survivor Maryland as a whole is that those episodes still feel fun and that there's a lot happening, even when the eventual boot maybe is who you would expect or is someone that you don't really care about.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the last episode, everyone knew that the main target for the entire majority alliance, that was a pretty unbreakable majority, was Sabrina. We knew Sabrina was going home, but there were still so many moments that made that episode a fantastic episode. And I even considered it when Colin asked me what my favorite episode of the season was, despite the fact that we knew who the boot was from day one. And I think that goes back to the genius. We knew what's going to happen, the result of the very first episode of the genius, but how we get there, why we got there, and what that means going forward in Survivor Maryland or the genius is what makes it so fantastic.
Yeah. As I was watching the most recent episode, right after that tribe lost yet another immunity challenge, I was thinking, like, what in the world would it take for me if I was Chris Thomas or Sabrina here to not have my vote on the other one, particularly Chris Thomas? I was like, for sure, there's going to be at least 3 votes on Sabrina, and that's going to be really unfortunate for me as a big Sabrina fan. But by the time the votes were coming in, I had genuinely started talking myself into the idea that something else may go down just because of how often that happens on this show.
And also because of how well the storyline was built up of this Holly-Eric battle, yeah, that you 100% believe that Holly needs to turn on Eric, wants to turn on Eric, and it makes complete sense for her to do so. And conversely, the same thing for Eric to turn on Holly, because we know they don't trust each other. And we've seen all these little moments that make that such a great story. So that makes that Sabrina vote even so much better, because you aren't sure and you think that maybe this is the time where they're going to make that move on each other.
Yeah. And to quickly go back to the question that I brought up a little earlier of the best episode of the season, I think I've truly enjoyed all of them, and there are plenty of valid cases to be made for many. I think that for me, I would go back to watching the premiere was just so much fun. just because it had been so long since I'd been waiting for this to finally come out. And, you know, not to shame Austin for taking his time. I definitely would never want to do that. Because we certainly are very happy to sacrifice time for quality. That's always in play with us. But I thought the premiere was so much fun, the same way that, you know, just recently having rewatched the Survivor Heroes versus Villains premiere was so much fun for the same exact reasons there. And then I also do really feel like the week that we got Feluke back, I thought was just such a huge deal to have her finally on the show. And sidebar number one, I would love just to have like live feed footage of all of the times that Austin has been asked about Feluke, and just make like a compilation video of all of the lying he's had to do over it this over what at this point has been like 3 years. But secondly, just having Feluke back in the game, it really like, while I was totally into the season, obviously in a major way without her there, and had kind of come to terms with that, it really put the season, it really cranked it up from a 10 to an 11 for me. And I feel like Feluke's presence, especially now that we're about to hit the merge, and I think she could find herself with a little more activity now that she's just not just going to be on the tribe that's winning all the immunity challenges. I'm really, really excited about the prospect of a lot more Feluke going forward. Mel, what do you think about how Feluke is set up right now?
She seems to be set up really well. I think coming into it, I think we were all a little skeptical that she was going to be a huge target, but they've really shown in the narrative that everyone really likes Feluke and that she's fun. Evan had some really bizarre ways of describing how much he enjoyed her. Shannon really likes her. I think she's set up really well going into this, and I think that there's a lot of bigger targets than Feluke, which is shocking to say, but I think that there's a lot of guys to go after first before they come after somebody like Feluke, who's can be behind the scenes sort of puppeting everything with her group to get them out.
Yeah, who is coming after Feluke at this point?
Not even Victoria, so I really don't know who's... Nobody has said that Feluke is their target. We know that there are other people who have their radars kind of out for others, but Feluke really is somehow laying low, which is amazing considering that she's Feluke and she's a star.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and Charles, I know as a big fantasy football and other sports and daily fantasy player of all varieties, you are a fan of people with high ceilings, I would imagine. How high do you think the ceiling is for Feluke? Is she in here with an actual chance at winning this season?
I think that's what's really turned me around on Feluke. I think among our group of friends that watched the show, I was probably lowest on Feluke coming in. And I think a lot of that had to do with how much I loved Victoria's game in season three and what happened in that challenge, and how kind of I was seeing it more from Victoria's point of view, and it made me a little lower in Feluke. And then obviously her final tribal council performance, you know, obviously it was unfortunate what happened, but it made me kind of lower on her as a player in the way I thought she handled it really badly, given the circumstances. So the way she's handled this season, she's not only a big character, but she's been playing an absolutely fantastic game. And to me, that's made me come first full circle. And I think that we really should be changing our opinions on a lot of these players, because we've seen them in a variety of different spots and situations that, you know, they've been dealt a lot of different hands, to use the poker reference, and how do they play those different cards. You can play one type of draw or one type of hand well, but if you get another type, how do you play that? And we've seen some people, you know, struggle with that. Some people play exactly the same and it work out, and some people play exactly the same and not work out, like Senti. And I think Feluke has shown that she's adaptable and has that game where she can play across different types of games and situations. And that makes it just so much better that she's this huge, huge character and that has this adaptability in the game.
So I don't know if, even if she can somehow make it to the end, are they going to not give her a chance because she was just parachuted into the game 5 weeks in, or will she be able to overcome that, do you think?
That would be very brutal and something that I hadn't really thought about before, but Feluke like losing in the finals here.
Well, and she does herself no favors. We saw this last time that I think she had that one coming in and turned a lot of people off with her actions there. So in that sense, it might be an uphill struggle. But within the game, we've never seen her really be on the defensive in the same way before. We had her be blindsided by that Holly vote towards the end of her season, but that's so late in the game that by that point, the stakes are pretty clear. Everyone knows what the deal is, and the cards are all face up on the table. This time around, there is so much room in the game to explore that, depending on how she plays it, like she could either be part of that majority going ahead, or she, it wouldn't surprise me if she tries to make a move and that fails and she's the one going out in, you know, like a Schubert-esque style, maybe after he does.
Yeah, I'm really, really interested in seeing, obviously, how a ton of these people, things play out for a ton of these people, but Feluke in particular, I think, is going to have put a lot of pressure on herself, I think, to go in there and give it a really good effort and really not play for anything other than first place, which I would imagine would be the case, again, for a lot of these people. But I'm really excited to see a super motivated Feluke, who has some experience under her belt with a previous season, really tackle this post-merge situation. I think that's going to be a ton of fun for sure. I guess let's go over a little bit to someone who has come up in passing a few times already, but who I have still at this point not seen Maryland Outback, but am definitely going to be making it a point to make that happen in its entirety in these next couple of weeks because of some of these people that we've seen so far do a fantastic job pre-merge and now are going to be really exciting post-merge. Let's dive a little deeper into Chris LeCompte here, who was, despite not having having seen his original season, someone that I had certainly heard of just in the pantheon of Survivor Maryland history, having a huge reputation coming out of that season. And I said in our preseason draft that we did with Austin and Hillary and Adam Klein that I thought Chris LeCompte's reputation was going to be way too much for him to overcome and that everyone was going to want his head on their mantle. It seems like, at least to this point, he's done an incredible job. I think it was, Mel, you brought up earlier the Sarah Lacina comparison of, I am blown away by how many people seem to truly feel like Chris LeCompte has their best interest at heart. And it's blowing my mind just how not effortlessly, it seems like he's putting in a ton of effort, but how easily it's been able to work for him. Mel, what do you think about Chris now as we enter this merge?
It blows my mind, but it also frustrates me because I just want some people to open their eyes and that it's same as Outback, that it seems like only Chris Thomas has his number and no one seems to be trying other than Senti, who briefly thought about it and then changed her mind because she keeps voting to have friendships. Go figure. But he really kind of had the last 2 weeks, though, a little bit of the rug pulled out from underneath him, and I think it's kind of shaken him, but I think in a way it's going to get his game back on track. I think that he really felt like he was cruising and that they had this in the bag, but I think that he could be a target, though, come merge, especially with these other people that he hasn't really had to interface with, like a Victoria or Feluke, and if they can get the right forces together, maybe finally the time will come to take out Chris LeCompte, but he's going to be huge to take down because he's a master at being in the game and befriending everyone.
Yeah, I could see. Dom and I recently rewatched and podcasted about Big Brother All-Stars back in the day, and I could see Victoria or Feluke being like the Nokomis to Chris LeCompte's Dr. Will, where he quickly recognizes, like, this person is not going to be hearing any of my bullshit, and that's very bad news for me.
I mean, it's the same with that. Feluke's already sussed out Schubel, and they've only been on a tribe for a few weeks, and really they weren't at that because now it's shuffled. You know, it's not going to be as easy as last time, and they all saw his season, so they know what he's capable of.
Yeah, definitely. And I have to go back to, like, just how blown away I am by the fact that he's, first of all, just in the game. And I know he had a close call, but just him even being there would impress me, have a sight unseen, regardless of how he got there. And to see him there, seemingly in a pretty, at least with a lot of people who seem to want to work with him, and we'll see how the merge dynamics play out, but it seems like he has at least plenty of room here to play if things can break his way early on. Charles, how likely do you think it is that LeCompte can continue almost cruising now that the merge is rolling around?
I think that he's not going to be a threat at the merge. I think that there's just other more tense points of people's distrust issues, that too many people still trust Chris LeCompte. And I think that just speaks to just how amazing of an emotional manipulator he is. We see people who say, I know Chris LeCompte needs to get out, when Chris Thomas is pitching to them or whoever is just talking to Chris LeCompte. They tell the cameras, he's so good this game, we need to get him out. And then besides themselves, they don't want to get him out. And that just shows you the connections that he's making. And then whether it's real connections or game connections or whatever it is, he's doing something that's propelling people to just have this obligation, whether it's Nicole Senti or it's not just her. People blame Nicole Senti because obviously what happened, you know, was her fault. But there's a lot of other people that haven't wanted to make the move on Crystal Comp as well. And I think that speaks to the variety of connections he's making. And I think that if someone makes a move on his group, yeah, it's more likely to be Eric trying to gather troops to get out of Holly or vice versa at the merge than it is for somebody to actually take that shot on Chris LeCompte. I think once this Chris Thomas vote, the Chris Thomas plan to get him out didn't go through, I kind of think that it's going to be a while until we see him get out. And I think my prediction that happens post the immunity run ending for the Paris twist, when maybe down the line we finally see some kind of, you know, power other alliance like a Victoria or a Holly or whoever it is at that point in the game could potentially finally take him out at that point. But I really don't think he's going home in the next two to four votes whatsoever.
I'm very confused as to what Chris's game actually is and conflicted on how I feel about it, because I don't know if he is just coasting on the back of these pregame relationships coming in, and in these spots where he should be in danger, he's just able to get by because he's able to rely on his relationships, or if he actually is in legitimate danger and he's having to fight and scramble every single week in order to find a way to survive. So he's either playing a very impressive game or just not an unimpressive game, but a game that doesn't require effort. And I don't know which it is at this point. And then in terms of the reception to it, You saw this villainous side to him back in his first season, and that's, if you're a Chris LeCompte fan, that's part of what you like about him. But to me, there is a slight tinge of like entitlement to it this time around. I don't know if you guys pick up on the same thing, where it's like at the Eric vote 2B, but which never was, it felt like he was just going off on Holly when it made no sense for him to do that. But it's just the idea that someone could go against him was just so out of bounds almost that he had to speak up against it. So I don't know. I think his story has a lot left to be written yet, and he can either confirm a lot of what we thought about him in his first season, make a second deep run, and be in contention to win again. Or if he goes down in a blaze of glory, then maybe our entire narrative about his legacy changes, kind of like a JT style almost.
I think that's a great point about the sense of entitlement, and I completely agree. I think there's been moments this season where he admittedly probably himself has been absolutely, you know, talking about how he's in dominant position in the game and no one can go against him. And I think that if we were in a normal Survivor season, we would have ruled him out already. We would say he has zero equity to win the game, like we did when I don't know what it was, you know, Kellen or something was saying that she's, you know, this has to happen and we can't do this and blah, 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 blah. That one Kellen episode that we were all together for, that immediately afterward, everyone was like, Kellen has 0% chance to win the game. Chris LeCompte had two or three moments like that. But what's so great about Survivor Maryland is that he's also had a couple of really endearing moments where he's talked about his mom and his mom passing away and all these other moments in the game where they focus on his edit and told a complete story about the game he's played and who he is. That if he gets to the end, we're going to be very, very satisfied to what happens. And if he gets voted out early, we're going to say, oh, that he was a great character, really fun to watch, but he's got out because, oh, he had way too much hubris in the game. So I think it's kind of a microcosm of what makes Survivor Maryland so good. And really, there's so many different ranges of outcome of what can happen with Chris LeCompte here. And that, again, was what makes it so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think Austin fully understands what kind of character he has on his hands with Chris LeCompte. So I totally am with you guys that there was potentially some sort of, I don't know if I would say a sense of entitlement, but just overconfidence at the very least early on, that he was in a really rock solid position. And I think, frankly, getting very close to having something not go his way while ultimately still having it go his way could have been the wake-up call that he really needed potentially entering this merge. So I still definitely do think Chris LeCompte being in a really good spot and converting this is totally in play. Like, I think that kind of complex winner edit is certainly on the table. Let's talk a little bit, though, about quickly the kind of, you know, if LeCompte is the Will Kirby, I guess this would be his Mike Boogie. It seems like Eric King has been doing a lot with LeCompte, and they've been pretty inseparable since the beginning. Charles, I guess, what are we supposed to be making of King in the game that he's been playing at this point, as far as you're concerned?
I think that we've seen you know, I think we've seen a couple of different sides of King. I think the first couple episodes, he was really outspoken about positioning himself really well. He was in a really nice power spot and kind of underneath the bigger targets of Evan and Chris LeCompte. But once the guy, Eric does not do well with swaps, is what we've kind of learned in the last two seasons. And once that swap happened, he's kind of put himself in a very polarizing position. He's so at the forefront of what happens. And I think he has a lot of really good strategic ideas, but very little finesse to complete them in. And that puts him in a spot where he's just kind of, we talked about Shubo being unnecessarily putting himself at the forefront with the Michelle vote. And I think that kind of, that's Eric's entire game is kind of a couple of mistakes that Shubo has made, that Eric is now in a forefront position where people, but he also doesn't have those deeper bond connections with anybody outside of potentially his partner and Chris LeCompte. So he's in a really vulnerable spot here where people know he's a big target. He's allied with other big targets that people want to take a shot at him at, and they don't have that likability or trust factor with him as well. So I think he's, you know, plus 50% greater to go home at the merge episode on these two votes.
Oh, interesting call. Yeah. Mel, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I was talking to Brian Scally earlier, and I really am kind of hoping Eric is the merge boot. I think that Eric starts strong and always has some pretty good strategic ideas, but I think he always lacks a bit in the social game. And I think where other players have learned from their past mistakes, like a Shannon and some of the Soka trio have learned that we need to socialize with people outside of the two other people in our alliance, I feel that Eric kind of sticks to his group and isn't moving around a lot and making the other connections that he's going to need. And the fact is that he wants to turn against the partner of, you know, his closest ally. And eventually, if that comes out, it's not going to be, you know, something that Chris LeCompte wants to hear, because Chris LeCompte wants that advantage, and he doesn't want probably Eric to get it with Shannon.
Dom, how likely do you think it is, if at all, that we hit the merge or any point late after the merge and King says to himself, enough with just doing what Chris LeCompte wants, I'm going to start blazing my own path? Or do you feel like he's locked in?
That one's so hard for me, because you go back to his first season, he wanted to be the alpha male. He had to be the guy in charge. And I think that is a core part of his personality. And the fact that Chris LeCompte is perceived as the leader and as a better player, I think does rankle him to some degree. But I don't know if he's going to be as willing to just flip up all of that and turn on his roommate and turn on his closest ally just so he can have that control a few rounds in advance. I think he's going to play a little bit more cautiously than that.
So EK is not the new PK?
No, he's not. Solid Survivor South Africa spoiler. It's a real deep cut there.
Yeah. All right. So that should be really interesting.
One more thing on King real quick.
Sure,
Dom, ahead. I think I agree with what you just said on about him not wanting to rock the boat, but that brings back in the partner's twist. He has to rock the boat to win the partner's twist. We're very much on the table that if either Victoria or Chris Thomas goes home in the next couple episodes, those are the only two partner teams left. So he's going to have to turn on somebody, and, you know, we'll see how that plays. Obviously, he's going to go for Holly, but, you know, Chris LeCompte's also going to be going for King. So I think that we are set up for a couple storylines where a lot of close allies are going to be voting for each other, and I actually think that there's a strong world in which Chris LeCompte votes out King. Wow. In the next couple of votes.
It makes
I would say that
I would love it. Yeah.
I feel like this season that Chris LeCompte is the Steve Sleazeman and Eric is the Chris LeCompte, and that he's the more loyal, the loyal follower to sort of the King who's kind of running it. Though I do think that you could argue that Chris LeCompte was also stronger first time around, but he definitely was playing more for a partnership as opposed to a solo in Outback versus this time. You know, it's clear that Chris LeCompte is playing for Chris LeCompte to win the game.
That first time, I would argue that Steve Sleazeman was the Chris LeCompte, and Chris LeCompte was a Steve Sleazeman. I think you can look at that season and have a different reading where, like, Steve is a loyal one.
Hang on, let me track this.
I'm now in the vortex. I have no idea.
Yeah, I need a whiteboard. I'm writing this out. I think I even confused myself.
That's what makes this great.
Yeah, this is why Survivor Maryland is amazing, because there's just so much change and yet so much similar to last time that you can just, like, tie it all together. It's amazing. It's so good.
I love having Dom. You are the ultimate galactic brain kind of Survivor Maryland analyst.
Well, that's my role. That's why I invited myself on here. But with Eric, I don't get it. It's kind of what I was saying about Holly before, but Holly, I've come around. I can see what the missing link is. With Eric, I don't know why people are flocking to him. With the comp, I get it, because he does have this charisma to him. He is this active just force of energy in the game, even if you disagree with him or you don't like what he's doing. But with Eric, it seems like he's just there and just kind of smug about the situation. And he's sitting pretty because of the comp, but I don't know if that...
And the partner twist.
Yeah, but I don't know if those...
from all of the luck, but none of the actual strategy.
Right, and I don't know if those crutches are taken away from him, if he can regroup and get himself back into a good position.
Right, I guess, like, if we want to talk about him potentially breaking off from Chris LeCompte, where's he going to go? And I guess the place might be directly over with the Soka trio, who could be, like, a potentially oppositional force to LeCompte now that we're hitting the merge. But I think this partner twist is probably going to be the driving force behind that kind of action and the Soka trio and how they interact with the LeCompte and King kind of alliance as they enter this merge here. And I think one of the things, if Eric King is going to do well in this game, that could be a big reason for that is the fact that his partner is Shannon, who seems to be in a really strong spot with at least the people on her tribe. And I would guess the people at the merge are going to be at least liking Shannon. I do imagine at a certain point she will be viewed as a threat, but I don't think it's going to be right away. And I think that partnership with King could be really interesting in figuring out how those dynamics go. Charles, what do you think about Shannon now as we enter this merge and how she's done to this point?
I think that's a perfect transition, because I was actually going to interrupt you and say I think we should be calling it the Soka duo and not the Soka trio, because Evan and Micah seemingly have no other game other than trying to benefit Evan and Micah. And I know we've heard some scenes from Micah which have been really promising for his position in the game, a little bit of talking about, you know, where Shannon's true alliances are and the fact that he's closer with Shannon and Shannon and Evan don't get along and all these other things. And we've seen a couple of scenes with Micah and Sierra. But I think Shannon's kind of the only one of those three who's been playing her own game and is really positioned, as we talked about kind of at the outset when you made your, you know, you said that you had Shubo ahead of Shannon and winner equity at any point this season. Shannon is in that position where it kind of, no matter which way the dynamics of this partner twist do play out, her partner's getting targeted first, and then people might have to go for the other teams. And no matter which way the alliances kind of win out here, whether it's a girls alliance or it's this partner twist alliance or it's some kind of Soka trio Shubo alliance or with Faluke or what, kind of wherever that plays out, Shannon is at the dead center of kind of wherever that plays out. So I, you know, if Holly is my one, Shannon's my 1A right now in terms of best position in the game. And I know some people are concerned by what happened with Shubo in the last episode and her basically being completely upfront with the fact that she's now targeting him. And I do think that move lacks some finesse, but I just do think that she has so much more social capital at this point in the game than Shubo does, because he's played himself out of all these positions that he was in before the last couple of votes.
Yeah, sorry. I was hoping someone else would just organically jump in on Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, I could keep going. I have a lot more time on Shannon. I can keep going.
You agree with what Charles said.
I know my takes are too good. No one has a response. But.
I know. Our mind is blown. You've said it all. But I totally agree. I think that for me, I actually would have, and I do love Holly, but I do think Shannon is number one right now. I think Shannon has made connections with nearly everybody in the game. I'm trying to think of who she hasn't. And like you said, even though she really directly told Shubal that he's her target, no one's really on Team Shubal anymore. Shubal's going to have to be scrambling to find some allies after all the kind of shenanigans he pulled on the other tribe.
Yeah. Dom, what do you think about how Shannon's been doing so far?
I think she's been doing fantastic. When we did our preseason draft, I took her pretty high, and I wasn't sure how happy I should be about that, but she has really delivered. And I thought that coming into the season, because in terms of the timing, as far as I know, this began just after they had finished watching the Terrapin Trials finale. So Guts and Glory had not aired yet. So you see this with the Alex Pascal vote off, where he leaves because he doesn't make a good first impression. And in his first season, things broke in such a way that he had the time to kind of win people over and start to learn what the game is really about. But this time around, you see the guy that you don't know. He doesn't come across very well. So you just boot him out, and that's the end of his story. And I think for Shannon, though, that almost benefited her in the other direction, because you can say she was a loyal player in her season, and she was, but she was also one of the more the headstrong players. She was finding idols, playing idols, and seemed like a real threat to win. So coming to this season, you meet Shannon for the first time, and she's getting along well with everyone. She seems really friendly and open and honest, and she seems like the ideal player to work with. And you're, she's not on your radar as this massive threat that you have to go after, when in fact, aside from Holly, maybe one or two other people, I'd have her as maybe the most likely to win at this point, or the most dangerous player that you need to get rid of.
Yeah, I don't think many people, frankly, would even disagree with that. I think I haven't heard virtually anyone feel like Shannon wasn't out there crushing it so far this season. And I think a big reason for that is something I think it was you, Charles, who mentioned. It really seems like out of the Soka trio, all three of them came in totally happy to work together, and I'm sure trusting each other more than they would virtually anyone else in the cast. And I'm sure they were all very happy when they swap onto the same tribe and they win the challenges. And I'm guessing going into this merge, they will continue to be happy to work together for the time being. But it does seem like Micah and Evan, at least based on what we've seen, are not actively out there looking for other things they could be pursuing in the event that the Soka trio doesn't necessarily work out. Whereas Shannon, it seems like, is in there with the approach of, yeah, the Soka trio would be great, but I also understand that there's a lot more I need to be doing to make this go my way and to keep it going my way. And it seems like so far, Shannon's been knocking it out of the park on basically everything we've seen from her.
Which, by the way, was the reason the Soka trio lost the game in season 3. They lost the game because they did not have tight enough alliance. The opposite of that. They only had their tight alliances with them and Alan and whatever not. And they had all the floaters in the game, or floaters, quote unquote, the mats and the whatever nots. They just didn't have enough allegiance to that because they didn't make those connections until they were desperate to need him or whoever else it was.
And there's Evan or Micah referencing that in one of these episodes about like,
and then they come out and
learn,
play the exact same game.
Charles,
so low on Evan and Micah.
Charles, counterpoint here. They lost in their season because Alan drew the wrong rock, which was tragic by itself, of course, but also meant that the Soko Trio's games were ended at that point. If anyone on the other team draws that rock instead, then one of the Soko Trio wins, and it quite possibly is Shannon. And I think she would go down in a much better light. And also, you would be seeing Evan and Micah in a much better light instead of just finding these reasons out of the blue to discredit them now.
No. My point, I'm not saying the sole reason they lost the game was, but they should never have been in a position where they were down to a rock draw where they were in that position, right?
They were lucky to get to a rock draw.
Right, because exactly. If they played a better game, they would have just been steamrolling the game because they had this tight three as well as tight other social alliances with people on the outside. That's the whole thing that Chris LeCompte does. He had a tight alliance, but he also was able to pick up people throughout the game because he had close connections with Senti and really use her in the game to kind of position himself in the game. And that's what Holly, what I would said before, her making that small connection or big connection with Rebecca shows her how good she is at the game. And that's what the Soka trio don't do. They don't make that bond with the people who they don't need for that vote or they aren't in a tight alliance with in the game. And that's my point of what Evan and Micah are doing, the same exact thing again. They have a tight connection with the three of them. They've had a tight connection with Shubal because they think they need him in the game and he's been in their alliance. But they aren't making that. I'm sure they're not as close with the Alexes or whoever else they are going to come into play in this, the future of the game here.
But that's not giving enough credit to the other players on that season, if you ask me, because you can say that they didn't do a good enough job of making other alliances, but everybody else knew it was in their best interest in the game to team up against the trio. They were able to coordinate that effectively, and that's why the rest of that cast, I think, deserves some credit for that. And you had Alex and Gacy playing in the middle and playing both sides and flopping back and forth. And on the other side, who else from there is meant to come over and join the trio? Why would you flip on your team just to go into fourth? So I think everybody played that situation about how they were meant to, and it was unfortunate for the trio and, of course, for Alan that things ended the way they did.
Well, remember that they did try to get Molly early on, and Molly didn't fight. And instead of trying to win her back properly, the whole thing became, in the end, fuck Molly. And poor Molly got crapped all over when she just made a move against them. But because they didn't work on those relationships, they had nothing to go back to. And it was more like groveling to Molly at the end as opposed to if they had kind of kept up a relationship. And that's where I think Shannon has learned from last time, and that Evan and Micah have not. And maybe Micah a little, but they just three is not enough votes, and even with their bigger alliance, they're going to need more, and you need a backup plan. And Shannon has about three or four in her pocket right now.
Well, what is the plan for the Soka trio? Is Shannon going to be in your view, I suppose, Mel, approaching this merge with the objective of making life as easy as possible right away for the Soka trio, or is she going to be maybe more selfish about it?
I feel like what Shannon might be thinking of, and I probably would, is really seeing that when you get to that first merge challenge to see who's going to win immunity, because I think that might dictate also the power. If someone like an outlier, like let's say a Victoria or Faluke win, that could change everything, versus if it's just a Chris LeCompte or a King gets it, it might keep that, you know, core five or six together to start with, as opposed to swapping the game right away.
Yeah, Charles, what do you think about Shannon's priorities now that she's at the merge here and how she's going to be pursuing
it? I think that Shannon, you know, what's so great about Spider-Man, like we talked about, is we've seen all these people, whether it's in the preseason or the first episode, be really self-aware with their games and talk about what they did wrong and what they need to work on. And we saw that with Alex Pascal. We saw that with Nicole Senti. We saw that even with Evan and Micah, and with, of course, with Shannon. And I think Shannon's the one who's executing it best. She came out and said, this is what I need to do, what she's doing. And knowing that, I think that she's going to kind of distance herself from the Soka trio. Because I don't think she's obviously going to outwardly shun them. She's always going to be close with them, and she definitely trusts them and might use them for some votes. But I think her long-term plans in the game are more with Faluke and Holly than they are with, and obviously with Eric, than they are with the Soka duo of Evan and Micah, especially Evan. Who you know, we've seen Micah talk about, which I think has to come in to play. I don't think they include that Micah scene where they literally had no effect on that vote, where it's the two of them together and it's Micah talking about how Shannon and Evan just don't trust each other. And I think that's going to be a major, major factor in, you know, in the next couple of votes, maybe even tonight. And I think you guys know my take that Evan might be on his way out the door. And if that happens, I think Shannon is going to be a major factor in that vote.
Yeah, I think it's possible that losing one of the other members of the Soka trio might be almost good in some timelines for Shannon early on, if they do start to be viewed as a big threat. Yeah, all right.
It would be ideal, really, if one of them goes even sooner. If something can happen where it's even out of her hands, then Shannon has no blood on her hands and can move along into a new alliance because the Soka trio got dismantled by somebody else's power.
Mm-hmm. I actually, for the first time tonight, might disagree with you. I think that she's going to want the Bloods on her hands.
For
resume in this game, I think that a lot of people have talked about, even the preseason and during the season, they really want to reward the person that played an amazing game because it is All-Stars. And also because I think that Evan and her, she already knows that they distrust each other to some extent. And Micah is clearly evident between the three of them if Micah's outwardly talked about it in the pre-merge game. So I don't think she's going to be pulling any fast ones by, you know, pretending to Evan that she voted with him or whatnot. And I think, if anything, she'll earn other people's respect in the game, including Evan's, by voting him out of the game and being the one that kind of led that charge. So I think that's more in play for me than her, you know, getting lucky and defaulting into back alliances because Evan gets voted out of the game.
Yeah, and Dom, I assume you're still holding out hope that we're going to show up to the merge and it's going to be a double episode because the first one is going to be Alan returning to the game.
Quattro. Shannon might want to prove her loyalty or to at least make a statement by joining in or even initiating a vote against Evan or Micah, because if she thinks she's in such a good spot that the only thing dragging her down is that she's seen as too closely linked to the other players from her season, and I think Victoria at least was on the crew and maybe some other people were as well. So they know about the Soka trio as a unit. They know that this is a thing. So if she can detach herself from that and then blend into the background a bit, that might be the best move for her, even if it involves losing two of her closest friends in the game.
Yeah. So I think Shannon's going to be maybe the most interesting person to focus on come merge time, although she's probably the fourth person I've said that about at this point in the podcast. It's such a testament to how strong this cast is and this season is and how great a job Austin has done, frankly, with giving them compelling kind of game dynamics with which to work that make this merge so interesting. And with a couple other people, along with Evan and Micah, there have been another couple of people that have been a little quieter to this point, but are still here at the merge that we definitely don't want to skip over. I'm curious to hear what takes we have. And I guess let's start with Ashley. Charles, what do you think about Ashley in her second shot now here on the heels of an amazing appearance, I've told, in the Maryland Outback, which, again, I haven't seen, but I am loving Ashley and her presence on this season. Are you an Ashley fan?
Yeah, I think that's, again, I know we keep saying this, and it sounds like we're just talking about how great our show is, the show is, because, you know, Austin's our friend, but it just is a testament to the show that Ashley's, what, the 12th person that we're talking about on the board, and she's just an amazing character. There's so much to talk about Ashley, and I think even in the context of her storyline in the game, I think there's a lot to be said about where's Ashley going to end up. You know, in a normal season, Ashley would be – in a normal Survivor season, Ashley would be a complete purple edit. The second she talked, you'd know she's going home. But in a season like this, while I do think that it's in play that she's, you know, maybe an unlucky person getting voted out or just an easy vote at some point when there's idols going on or the partner twist or something like that, I do think there's also plenty of storylines where she makes it really deep in the game in some kind of women's alliance or an alliance with Chris LeCompte or whatever, and potentially a losing finalist. And it's not completely outside the realm of possibility that she could somehow become a major player in this game. And I'm honestly here for it, despite the fact that she's not one of my favorite players. I think, you know, we've talked about ranking our favorite players versus who we think is going to win the game, and Ashley wasn't near the top of my list for me, but it doesn't mean that I'd be unhappy in any world where Ashley takes over the game. And we've seen enough from her positively about how she's perceiving the game from Chris Thomas and from other people that that's not outside the realm of possibility whatsoever.
Yeah, Mel, where do you see Ashley fitting into this merge?
I don't know where she really fits totally into the game. It seems right now she's kind of a loyal Chris LeCompte soldier. That said, I feel like Ashley's whole story is her own personal redemption from last time. In the Outback, everyone just kind of hated her from right on the onset, and everyone just wanted her out a long time for being annoying and nagging and, you know, kind of losing her temper, a little bit of a sore spot. But the fact is that everyone really likes Ashley this time, other than Siona, but, you know, R.I.P. But Ashley really turned it around. I know, Queen Siona, we miss her. But Ashley's really turned it around that people seem to like her and want to work with her, which is a total turnaround from last time she played.
I don't know if I would go that far. It seems like she's still floating around
True.
The edges of the group.
A little more accepted. And by that, I mean she has like three or four people who will talk to her, as opposed to everyone was kind of just like, Ashley was kind of like the original fuck Molly, I guess.
We've also had two or three people talk about how surprised they are that she is playing the game this way and she has made these social connections. I think it was Chris LeCompte this episode and Chris Thomas in a past episode, which was highlighted in the edit in the scene that like really did not play out to really affect the vote. So I think that we have seen some really good secondhand view and a lot of, you know, content Ashley specific and little moments that support that as well, what Mel was saying.
Right after Drunk Tribal Council, it was her and Chris LeCompte, and he really appreciated her staying by his side through all of that, because anything could have gone down. The game could – she could have flipped that game, but she stayed loyal to him, and he really appreciated that.
Yeah, Ashley is someone for me who, having not seen her first time around, I didn't have the highest of expectations after the premiere, just seeing – I guess mostly what Siona had to say about her, which was legendary, and RIP queen indeed, by the way, to Siona. But Ashley, over the course of these first nine tribal councils that we've had here, Ashley has really stood out to me as one of my favorite kind of like tertiary characters of the season, who obviously hasn't been like driving the strategic action, but every single time Ashley comes in on the screen, I'm always very happy and I feel like she's a lot of fun and always delivers. Dom, what do you think about Ashley at this point?
So, like I said, I don't know if I like Ashley personally, but I sympathize with her because I have been the Ashley far too often. So there's some.
You're not the Ashley as a group. I've explained this to you multiple times.
The similarities are obvious, Charles. You just look at this. But I love the fact that you have someone in there who no one is like a close friend with. They just kind of tolerate, and she is going to be an important vote sometime down the road. And I could easily see like Chris LeCompte's game coming down to him begging Ashley to stick with him at some crucial juncture, and I'm going to be here for that at least when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, for the record, I also felt virtually the exact same way about Senti as well, who after the premiere, I didn't have the biggest expectations for them, like, within the game or as characters, but Senti obviously no longer with us in the game, unfortunately, but I loved every time Senti was on screen as well, and I felt like they served, for me at least, very, very similar roles within the show, and I was totally there for all of it, and I'm hoping that Ashley can stick around for a while and keep that going. Charles, how far do you feel like Ashley, now that we're at the merge, can end up making it here? Because certainly over the course of Survivor history, there have been plenty of people who have not been viewed as the biggest threats that still go pretty deep in the game.
Yeah, I think Senti's in a storyline where Chris, the timeline where Chris the Comte wins the game, I think it's very likely that Senti is in the final two. I don't know what happened. Anyway, yeah, I think Ashley's in the final two in that scenario a lot of times. And that's because she's loyal to him. She's not a threat, and I think she has some maneuverability in the game that even in votes where he might be in the dark for, she potentially has some ways to go. I think there's a lot of timelines where she's also out at, you know, ninth or eighth in a casualty of, like I said, a certain twist. So if I had to – it really depends on kind of where you think the rest of the structure of the game is going to go, and I – obviously think that there's some kind of, I think I've talked about multiple times, that there's this big girls alliance that potentially is going to come in with Victoria, Holly, Faluke, and Shannon at different, you know, some variety of that. I don't necessarily think all those are going to be, you know, deep, deep, deep players in the game, but I think that a core alliance is going to dominate the game. And in that scenario, Ashley is, you know, for me is probably like one of the last people out who's not in that alliance or that core alliance. So maybe she's like a sixth place or a fifth place person.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the most likely kind of result for her.
Right. Like, to me, frankly, I don't see how Ashley's getting voted out soon. I don't know who's targeting her anytime soon. Is there, Mel, do you see a scenario? I guess anything is certainly possible on Survivor Maryland. But how is Ashley going to be the, you know, near the top of anyone's boot list anytime soon?
Yeah, Charles nailed it exactly on the spot. I would say that she's probably like six, if not midway through, where there's either a twist or just she's sort of the last woman standing before something else bigger happens. She's just kind of there, but in like a way that she could be taken to the end, but probably will just sort of be cut in a, you know, two core alliances battling and one wins out and she lasts.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really hoping at least a couple of votes can come down to how Ashley wants the game to go. I think that would be a lot of fun. Similarly, I think we could have some fun, even though he's been a little bit quiet, so to put it mildly, in the pre-merge. Alex G's still here hanging around for the merge. The only thing I can think of that I've really seen out of, like, Alex just even being involved in, like, hypothetical political dynamics in the game is him getting kind of roped in with Shubal and the Soka trio and feeling like he was going to have some control if that tribe that I don't think even ever went to one tribal council after the swap ended up going back again. I feel like Alex, probably not near the top of many people's winner candidates at this point, but still certainly could be an interesting wild card now that we're at the merge. Mel, what do you think about how he's going to stack up here?
So I think one part we forget, too, because he's just kind of a little forgettable, is in my rewatch in the last, you know, heavy 24 hours prepping for this, is that he also approached Victoria for a final two. Victoria was taken aback at the level of him offering final two this early. So with sort of him being in the middle of Shubal and Victoria, and, you know, potentially I think Shubal and Victoria might have some stuff going on, I feel like maybe Alex is one of those people, too, that just kind of rides it out for a while. I don't think he's going to be the strategic mastermind of anything, but I mean, it's Survivor Maryland, so really anything is possible.
Yeah, that's what they say about it.
They say expect the unexpected. I think that's their catchphrase.
I think Mel nailed it, and I would go one step further. Even I think that scene with Victoria is one of the key scenes of the entire season, and really why I think Victoria has really long legs in the game and potentially is pretty high up in my winner rankings list was that scene. And the way that the whole Shubal Alex G dynamic has played out, I actually think that Alex G is going to be the one that takes out Shubal. Not him being strategic, but him being the deciding vote in a vote that ultimately decides Shubal's fate. And, you know, and I think a big part of that maneuverability is going to be this Faluke and Victoria coming together alliance, where they both realize that they need to come together because Shubal is just too crafty and too big of a threat. And we've seen both of them talk about this repeatedly, along with Shannon as well. And I think that you know, I think we're in an alliance where maybe the guys are sticking with Chubal and Alex Shi is the one, or there's some combination. Alex Shi comes over and it decides to vote with Victoria, and that propels that side to make a really deep run to the game, because he turns his back on the guy that Chubal thought he had in his pocket the entire time in the game.
Yeah, just quickly, I want to endorse this view of anything that it is indeed possible, but also to say that this scenario that's been floated of Alex Genius taking down Chubal in like a Ian versus Boogie kind of situation, I like that. I could see it happening. Either way, I'm pretty sure Chubal is going to meet a dramatic and grisly fate at some point, and I don't know when it's going to be, but I'm going to have a lot of fun speculating about it for as long as we have to wait.
Yeah.
But I think Alex G is going to be dragged along for a few votes, maybe have a crowning moment somewhere, but I don't see him like being there at the end unless it's just getting dragged along as a goat.
Okay, I don't see the finale being the Alex G show. Strong stuff. And guys, one other person left here that we talked a little bit about earlier, but we got to dive in a little deeper. Someone that I think all four of us are rooting super hard for. We got to talk about Chris Thomas, who has somehow Kyung-hooned his way to this merge at this point.
The legend. Now,
it really seems like in an incredibly interesting position here now. Mel, how do you see this playing out for Chris Thomas? If you could even begin to project things.
God, if anything, we just know this much, which is Chris Thomas won't go down without a fight. And whatever your opinions are of him, at least he's always trying to shake it up. He might be going for the obvious target every time of really being hell-bent on getting out Chris Lacombe, but at least he's trying, and he'll do whatever it takes and at least go out swinging. And that's what I can't wait for, regardless of how long he lasts, which I hope is to the finale. But I know every week I'm basically just sit and pray for my man, Chris T.
Yeah, liquid courage comes in pretty handy, it turns out, on Survivor Maryland.
Charles, pour a flask, get ready.
Yeah, Charles, what do you think Chris is even going to be, like, how's he even going to be beginning to approach this merge dynamic, or how should he be?
I it's really hard for me to picture how his story plays out, but I do want to say a couple of things. First of all, I think I said this to you, Dom and Colin. I think since Texgate, Chris Thomas has been pretty easily the best player in this game, strategic wise and everything. If you just look at all the moves he's made, whether they've been successful or unsuccessful, I mean, the Chris Lacombe vote out was executed flawlessly. It would have been probably the best move in the history of Survivor Maryland. And obviously it's out of his control that Senti kind of punted there and he made a complete move that wasn't in her best interests. But the way Chris Thomas went about that and organized that was absolutely fantastic. And I think he deserves an incredible amount of credit for the way he survived the last two votes as well, especially this most recent vote where the way he read the situation, tried to make his pitch to Holly and Eric and make that move, but was able to read them, understand that move wasn't going to happen, and still put his vote on Sabrina, and what she wasn't able to do. And that's ultimately what saves him again this week. It's his social game, his ability to just continue to keep fighting back, and this strategic decision that was ultimately really, really good. So I think that he's been an absolutely fantastic player game-wise. It's kind of the reverse Chubal to me. I think Chubal's made all these big moves that look really, really good, but I think they're actually ultimately really bad moves if you look at, you know, what the ultimate, not even results-oriented, but what the benefit is for him. And for me, Chris Thomas maybe not has the best execution in the world, but I think he's executed some stuff really well, and his strategic thoughts have been maybe the best of the season so far.
The reverse Chubal thing is an interesting call. Also edit wise, where for me Chubal really was the front runner from the early episodes, and then at a certain point I started thinking, oh, is this necessarily meant to be like a mastermind thing, or is this potentially him getting overconfident in his position within the game? And Chris Thomas to me, I mean, since like episode two, I've been totally calling Chris, all right, this is finally going to be the week Chris Thomas obviously gets voted out. But as Chubal has kind of started to nosedive a bit, I think, as the edit is concerned, Chris Thomas, at least for me, and I guess I kind of have a weird sense of what I would root for in this scenario, but I love and am perhaps rooting for Chris Thomas number one out of this entire cast. I would love it if Chris Thomas, if he could not only, like, I think winning may be a bit of a tall order, but what I'm very much really hoping happens, and now we'll be very upset if it doesn't happen, Frank, is just, I think it would be so cute, is that he wins the pairs twist without ever knowing that Victoria was his pair.
Oh my God, that would be epic. And that's what I really, first of all, I think I said this on Twitter like last week. I think Dom and I were talking about, and I think Matt, Gage, and everyone, we were talking about the dream alliance that has not happened yet, but I think could happen because of this partner twist. Chris T and Faluke, the world would explode if they came together. The internet would explode because we are all obsessed with these two. Put them together. Just imagine, like, that's what it, honestly, at the merge, what would be amazing if it could happen would be this group of, so to say, like, outsiders of a Chris T, a Faluke, a Victoria, all the people that aren't really in this major alliance coming together to take on this Chris Lacombe, Soka Trio power alliance that's going on the other side. It could be a really cool head-to-head if that were to happen.
I actually, again, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that is what's going to happen. I think what we've seen, these little, well, another one of these little scenes that we've seen over and over again is this Holly-Chris T relationship.
I love it.
I think that ultimately is going to be a huge factor post-merge too. And I actually think Chris Thomas has a ton of win equity. I think out of all the people who we've kind of seen edit-wise, he's had maybe the most consistent edit from day one. And I personally had him number one in my rankings for the first two episodes. And then after TechSkate and everything that went happened after that, I basically took him off the board. I just reacted to a world where, like, there's no way this human being who did these things could potentially win the Survivor season. But if you really kind of bear down and separate on rewatch, I've gone back and rewatched a little bit of his scenes, he's just gotten such a consistent positive edit where he's just fighting, and other people just aren't seeing what he's seeing, and he's doing whatever he takes to win. And now he's positioning himself where there's all these little relationships that they've highlighted in the season that, to me, mean that he's making a very deep run in this game. And I don't know if, you know, ultimately Holly's his demise and Holly goes on to win, or he's in that alliance for a while, then, you know, maybe Shannon goes on to win or Victoria. But like I said, I think that that's my image of what's going to happen is this big group of alliances coming together against the Soka Trio and the Chris Lacombe to Eric side. And I think Chris Thomas is going to be a very strong member in that with Holly down the road potentially, and he could definitely win the game. And I think he'd probably be in my top two or three people to win the game.
I dare say this. Do you think perhaps that Sia would give Chris Thomas money if he made it on Real Survivor? Because I feel like if she were watching this, I think he could walk away with maybe 10 to 20 grand from Sia.
Well, I think that's the thing about Chris Thomas is, like, even if you recognize, okay, he may be all over the place this week or whatever, or he's just drunk out of his mind at this tribal council, I still feel like whatever he's up to, even if you recognize he's being kind of a little shit stirrer about it, there's some kind of charming aspect about the way that he goes about doing all this. Like, he kind of seems like in on the joke to a certain extent, of like almost like he's doing it for the sake of doing it. And I think that makes him so fun to watch and root for.
And they've hit on that a few times, that they don't know if is Chris Thomas really that drunk, or is he playing up this drunk character and stupidity to kind of get along.
How a really genius flashback where we find out it's been water in the flask the whole time.
The best storyline, the best timeline of all time. Literally the best timeline. I just think he's up there with me, if not surpassed, like Tony Vlachos 1.0 is one of the best characters in the history of Survivor for me. And the combination of just everything that he's done, what's happened, and obviously the craziness that he's got about doing it as well.
Yeah, well, Charles, it sounds like he's near the top of your winner rankings. What does the top of your winner equity board look like at this point, Charles?
Yeah, I think my top three, and I think the one that we kind of touched on, but I think we should really talk a little bit more about, but I think my top three would be Holly and Shannon as a top two tier, and then Chris Thomas. But I think and then fourth, I'd probably have Victoria. And I think that we haven't really talked about Victoria at all. I mean, we mentioned her briefly in a couple of different passings, but I think that her edit has been really like a really steady kind of picking up steam as we've gone along. And like I said in the past that, you know, you would think that she's definitely the merge boot in a regular Survivor season because of her peak invisibility. But I really think that her story is there's a lot more to be told about her story with all this Faluke stuff. And I think that there's a really strong timeline where we hit a point in the game where there's seven people left. And Victoria is in the the crux of, you know, maybe two different alliances and can definitely win the game from that kind of in the mix for me. And then after that top four, I think you really have to put Chris Lacombe there. And again, it's kind of crazy to think about that. We're talking about Victoria, Chris Lacombe, and Chris Thomas as three of the five people in the top five win equity at this point in the game. It is just absolutely baffling, not only from the target perspective, but also what they've done this season and the edit that they've gotten this season. There's all three of those people have gotten serious negative edits at different points in the season for different reasons, but they just have to be in the mix based on the content they've been gotten. And, you know, after that, I think, the rest of the people for me are pretty close to drawing dead. I would say that Micah has some equity just because we've seen some scenes with him, without the other Ahsoka duos and whatnot. But to me, that was really just focused on keeping the intrigue along with a couple of the Sierra boats. So I really think he's pretty much dead. And then Evan, Shubal, as I've talked about, Eric and Ashley, I think are drawing dead.
How about Faluke?
Oh, I completely forgot about Faluke. I don't know how that happens, obviously. I'll be honest, I have no idea what to make of the Faluke edit, and I love that so much. And you definitely cannot rule her out. She's playing a really good game and obviously getting a really good edit, but it's hard for me to kind of see the exact storyline that kind of gets her there, unless it's this alliance I'm talking about. And I guess her and Holly just kind of take over the game and she cuts Holly at some point. That's really the only storyline I see late game. But that being said, I see her staying in for a very long time until Final Seven or so.
Yeah, I feel like I could see Faluke winning. I don't feel like I would be ruling it out based on what we've seen so far. Yeah. My thought on it would be, would Austin really have us come in and do a 2-hour draft knowing that the eventual winner was not even going to be on the board for any of us to get? But the answer to that is probably, yeah, he would definitely do that for sure.
He lied about it for a long time.
And I would have so much more respect for Austin if all of us, we've all done various different drafts and all of us wasted that much time doing all these drafts and fretting over who's going to win the preseason and arguing about it, and it turns out that the person was never on the board in the first place.
You mentioning that
is making me think it's more likely that it's going to happen now. That I hadn't even considered it, but now it's seriously in play for me.
So Dom, I do think it would be interesting, as Charles referenced, to get a little into Victoria's edit. We talked about her spot in the game, but I think her edit has been really interesting, and I'd be curious what you, Dom, have to say about it at this point.
Well, there isn't one, right? So
I think there's becoming one.
I meant to be saying.
Whoa.
I'm indignant, Dom. What a horrible take.
I'm a little bit on the outside here.
I'm going to someone else. Here. Yeah, Dom, you're out here on this question.
No, I can't comment on something that doesn't exist. I can't disprove a negative. It's just, she's had no edit, and I don't know. Like I said at the top, I am going to think, because I have faith in Austin, that's because of her position in the game and of what he's giving her to work with, that he can't fashion anything that's relevant out of that at this point. Maybe that's going to change down the line. I don't know. But I'm assuming that she is in the game. She is as on the sidelines as it appears to be based on the edit. So what more do you want me to add? I can only just reiterate the same thing over and over again.
Jump in, too, on Dom's side, which is I think that I'll give a pro, which is I do think that Victoria is playing the game and has picked up some strong allies. Where I see the con is that I don't recall top of mind her connecting with these other people that are going to be the jury votes. So she's going to be taking out a Chris LeCompte, an Eric, an Ashley. Has she made any of those connections to win their votes over? Which, yes, you can win them over in a final tribal council potentially. But if she hasn't made those connections early on in a friendship capacity like a Shannon has, does she stand a chance when she gets to the end?
Well, the thing is, there's still, I'm on the Survivor Maryland wiki. Sabrina was voted out on day 34. And this is, what's this going?
Oh, geez.
80 some
days.
Oh, only 50?
No, I'm sorry. 50 more to go.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yes. There's so much time left. And so Austin, I certainly give enough credit to, as we talked earlier about Victoria, I think she was probably in roughly that kind of Aubrey game changer spot where she didn't feel like going out of her way to make any kind of big aggressive moves within the game was very necessary early on. And even if she'd wanted to, people probably wouldn't have been too receptive to that. But now that we're entering the merge, I don't see why we're ruling Victoria out. And she would, I'm with Charles here. I feel like Victoria, she wouldn't be the top of my list, but she would be she's in that second tier down for me. Like, I think the top of my list, I would be with you, Charles. I would say Holly and Shannon would probably be the top two for me. I'm more of a Chris LeCompte believer, I guess, than it sounds like the rest of the group is. But I think Victoria is right in that mix, and I would have her ahead of even Chris Thomas probably at this point.
I have Victoria at about a 5 or 6. I have her in, the midway point. I don't think she's drawing dead by any means, but I do think that in order for her to win, she's going to need to have some more connections.
But I think that's exactly the story that we've seen from her, is that she's starting to pick up these connections.
True.
She has this situation going on with Chubal, which again I think is going to be a major factor. She has this connection with Alex Chi that she's made, and of course she has the Holly connection that's been talked about multiple times, and she has, you know, some kind of Shannon and Faluke connection as well. Shannon more is a byproduct of that, just Shannon's close with Holly and Faluke, but Faluke and Victoria, we've seen little moments of them kind of getting along in the last couple episodes, which I think has really been highlighted by the edit, which makes me think that, I think, as Colin and I have talked about, that they're going to be voting together at some point in the future. And again, like, I do think there's a lot of timelines where she comes in second to a Holly or a Shannon. But there is plenty of them as well where she wins the game and really her edit's just beginning now and picking up. But I do probably think the most likely scenario is that she's the second place loser to Shannon or Holly.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dom, you're officially banned from ever talking about Victoria again, just for the record. But I do want to hear.
Edit is a crazy thing.
Dom, what is the top of your winner board looking like right now? You know, your winner pie, I guess, as we put it in Survivor Ghost Island terms.
So I would say Holly and Shannon would be at the top of my board, but I think it might be interesting to, as a closing exercise, go around the group and have everyone pick a winner, and you have to pick a name. You can't just prevaricate and say, oh, well, my top tier is X and Y and Z. I want a name. I want you to call your shot. And also say what you think is going to happen in this upcoming merge episode. Pick a merge boot.
All right, Mel, go first.
Oh, I have to go first? Okay. All right, pointing out to the outfield, and I'm going to go, and I feel like I'm not being much of a contrarian, but I feel like Shannon. I'm going to pick Shannon to win. You know, in my heart, I am rooting for my man, Chris T. I hope he lasts a long time, but I think right now Shannon is in the position to win. In terms of merge boot, I said I want it to be Eric, but I am kind of leaning towards the idea that someone like Evan's probably going out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably a pretty strong call. The reason I'm stalling now is because you just took the two people I was going to pick, and I want to make an interesting podcast and have different...
I know, we're such group thing tonight. But here's my thing about Survivor.
Sorry about that.
That's all good.
Listen, it's what happens. The good thing about Maryland is that we can't predict it, and also this is such a strong cast of All-Stars, dare I compare it to Genius All-Star level, that there's kind of no scenario where if someone gets to the end and I'll be disappointed, or maybe there are like one or two that I'd be a little bummed about. But overall, it's such a good cast that I can't be pissed at what happens.
Yeah. Charles, give us your gun to head winner pick right now and gun to head merge boot.
Yeah, by the way, before I do that quickly, I came in thinking I was going to have all these like flaming hot takes, and I think I have had some, but you guys have just kind of, especially Colin and Mel, have just been kind of thinking the exact same way I have, or maybe I'm just being convincing. I don't know what it is, but I love
it's been
it.
Boring, Charles. What's
together.
Going on?
Yeah. I'm trying to come up with hot things. I have Chris Thomas third in my winner rankings and all these different things, and everyone just agrees with me, I guess, which I love.
Look, I wanted you to be incendiary, and instead you're just going with the flow and giving this calm and measured analysis. That's not why you're here, Charles. You got to play it well.
All right, I'll give some fire finishes. Here we go to finish it off. So my merge boot, I've been saying this for weeks, but I think that the two people, and I would almost guarantee it that I think the next two or three votes are going to be a strong combination of Evan, Eric, and Chubal. And I think that I'm leaning towards Eric being almost 100% to go this episode, and the other two have a little more legs just on the story that's been told, especially Chubal. I could see Chubal being the target in one of the first two and kind of playing his idol and surviving and then going home in the next couple of votes after that. But, you know, Evan and Eric just don't really have much story to me beyond trusting a couple of people and a couple of people distrusting them as well. And that kind of story to me makes it seem like they're going to be very short for the game, especially Eric, which I just think Holly makes the move on him knowing that there's only three partners left in the game and he completely distrusts her. She almost has to make the move at this point in the game and then won the next two votes. And she just has so much more social capital than he does at this point.
Is Holly your gun to head winner pick?
I would flip-flop between her and Shannon, I think.
No, Charles, behave. You have to pick a name.
Second, I'll give a proclamation. One second. No, I mean, no one am I thinking. I literally been on Holly from day one. I was the only person on Holly before the season, and now it seems like everybody's on board. But, you know, to me, it seems like they've just featured a little bit more of her full reactions and a little deeper of an edit than Shannon has. Shannon's obviously made great connections with people and is in an amazing spot in the game, and definitely could win the game. But to me, it just seems like a little bit more of the story has been focused on Holly. And I think that is a lot of that's due to the fact that she's gone to more tribal councils. But to me, that just, I think maybe that's what's affecting my mind. But to me, that gun to my head, it's just Holly has to kind of win this game based on what we've seen from her connection she had as well as the position that she's in the game.
Yeah. And quick sidebar, actually, a quick plug for something that I watched the other day. And I'm guessing some other people in this podcast have also watched. But for the listeners, Holly and both Holly and Chris LeCompte are involved in a new season of this YouTube series of a new season of Sequester that is like an IRL, like everyone's together somewhere in a mansion playing this social strategic game. I watched the premiere that just came out the other day and very much enjoyed it. And I like, as someone who is definitely not going to be watching BB20, I'm very much looking forward to continuing watching Sequester the Black Hat on YouTube. So quick plug for that. I don't know who has seen it out of the people.
Watched it as well, and I had mixed thoughts. I mean, I think it was really fun, and obviously seeing Holly and LeCompte being, you know, this is not a spoiler, but being at the very center of the action in episode one just made me kind of love it, because those are probably my two favorite Survivor Maryland players of all time, other than Chris Thomas. Makes it really interesting. I do think they're trying to do a little bit too much, and there were certain aspects of the game where I was just like, I don't really understand why this is there and what this is going to affect. And I think it's the opposite of the partner's twist, which has been like the main through thread of the season. And I think Austin did such a good job of not introducing idols into the game early when that partner twist really was allowed to grow and be nursed and get focused and really affect the game, and then start to introduce idols with the whole Shubal dynamic. I think that makes it for such a great gameplay, because now we fully understand the partner's twist, we understand why it's there, how it's going to play, and all these different strategies that play around it, and now we're going to add in all these little wrinkles that are going to create different levels of strategic thinking as well. And I think that kind of the opposite of what's been going on in Sequester, where there's just so many things introduced at once that it's just like, how do you actually, like, the vote changed 45 times because there's so many different things to think about, and it's just hard to come up with an optimal strategy when that's going on.
For me, I just am assuming that I will get more familiar with who the people are and how the game works over the course of the season. There you go. Sequester the Black Hat on YouTube. Dom, who is your winner pick and merge boot?
So I'm going to say Holly is a winner pick. Charles, as always, is a bad influence and has got through to me. And I'm going to say Shubal as my merge boot, because I think when the game is so crazy and you have all these different alliances coming together, the easiest thing to do is to find someone who nobody trusts and just point fingers at them. And I think Shubal has, even though it's been fantastic TV, I fear that he has worked himself into that position now. And if anyone's capable of emerging from that, it's him. But I think he's going to have his back up against the wall here. So,
well, he has an idol, right? Does he still have an idol that he could potentially play if he gets wind of something going against him?
That is a very good point, which I hadn't considered. However, I'm not going to update my take. I'm still going to pick people as my merge boot here, and I'm sticking by it.
I agree with you, Dom. I think Shubal is going to be the first target at the merge, or the second target if it's Eric. But I do think he's going to survive a round because of that idol, like Colin said. But, you know, he could also not play it. That could be the end of his story as well. He could get completely fooled by Alex Chi telling him that they're not voting for him and all this stuff, and then he goes home with his idol in his pocket. It would be incredible.
Yeah, as tempted as I am to make Chris Thomas my official winner pick, I think I'm going to even this out. I'm going to side with Mel here, and I'm going to lock in Shannon as my winner pick as well. So a little two-on-two as we enter the merge here, split between Shannon and Holly. And I guess for my merge boot, I would say Shubal without the idol. I guess with the idol, I will go with give me Eric King, I guess, as my merge boot. I feel like is certainly in play. All right, guys, any other calls that you want to get out there? Any other hot takes, Charles or Mel, that or anything that didn't come up that you wanted to bring up?
Who's the second vote after the merge? I mean, we're getting a double episode, so it's essentially, you know, you got to predict the next one as well. I think we should all take a shot at that as well.
Okay, so who you got? Shoot your shot now, Charles.
I'll go first vote Eric King, second vote Evan.
Okay, Mel?
I'm going reverse. I'm going Evan first and then Eric King.
Dom?
I will say Schubel and then Eric. Possibly, maybe not in that order.
No, Dom, you get that order because I'm taking the other order. I'm taking King and then Schubel. All right. Awesome. So let's go around the horn. Mel, what would you like to plug at this time? I know you have a lot going on during Bachelor season and plenty of other shows. So where can people be finding all of what you've got?
You can follow me on Twitter at MelGotServed. You can also follow me on Instagram. I post a lot of weird pictures, a lot of abandoned TVs on the side of the road, and some other stuff too. But, you know, mostly that. And just really excited to keep talking about Survivor Maryland. So tweet at me about it. Tell me if you think my opinions are wrong or that you hate my Chris T opinions, but I'm going to stand by. And even now, like this whole conversation, I'm like, should I back Chris T to win? Should I have made him my winner pick?
Yes. I've officially made an impact, and I love it. It's the best.
No, truly, if Dom had picked someone other than Holly or Shannon, I would have picked a unique person too, and that would have been Chris Thomas. Wait.
So this is you being the kind of hipster that you accuse me of being every single episode. That,
yeah, absolutely. The real Colin Stone.
I would know. What I'm saying is, I wouldn't have wanted to been the person doubling up on someone else's pick. But once Dom had already done that, I didn't feel like I had to go make a unique, but ultimately, frankly, dishonest pick for the sake of having my own person.
It's yeah, we wouldn't want to agree with here. Me. This is our partner's twist.
It's me and Mel Colin against you guys.
I mean, we've seen Dom and I work together flawlessly before, so I think we're in a good spot here.
I'm the Victoria to Charles's Chris T, I think, in this
I think you're much more Victoria than you are Ashley. I think that's a great take.
I really feel like we should be guessing
who we are in the cast.
Dom
like
is definitely not the
people.
Ashley, but Charles is for sure the Chris T of the group.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. All right. And Charles, where can people be finding you if they want to tweet at you about how great your takes were?
Well, first of all, follow Taryn Armstrong on Twitch for social media for Social Strategy Sundays. That's the only place you'll really find me that matters. You know, it's a great
time.
I mean, you're already listening to this podcast, so I don't need to plug this podcast that you're already listening to. But obviously, listen to the Dom and Colin podcast, especially when I'm on it. You can follow me on Twitter at nolimits16423. Yes, it's the dumbest Twitter handle of all time. I'm a mixed bag on there, but I tweet a lot about Survivor Maryland and to these guys. So if you want to follow me on there, but be prepared for a lot of sports takes and other stuff as well. But again, follow us on Twitch. The three of us play together all the time, and Mel, we're going to get you on soon. I'd love to have you on. And it's just really fun time. And so Sunday nights, I think that's going to continue even with Big Brother starting. So exciting. And I got to say, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure being on with you guys. Thanks for having me on. I hope I brought some of the fire. It seems like we agreed way more than I thought we were going to. But I think we agreed with some takes that a lot of people are going to disagree with. So I think that makes this podcast fantastic as well.
Tweet us and disagree.
Like, we want to hear all of it. We just happen to be group thinking tonight. But I think that there's really differing opinions about everybody, and I can't wait to hear them. And for once, I guess maybe I'll get to hear the internet crap all over me, and that should be fun.
Well, I was concerned coming in that Colin and Charles were going to have this hyperbole arms race where the takes would get increasingly volcanic. They would try to outdo each other until you would have some truly galaxy brain opinion.
And that's what happens when we're together in real life, I feel like.
I just thought I'd be the only number one Chris T fan. I thought it was just me and Matt Gagan running the fan club. But apparently, you know, everyone's jumping on it. I thought I was going to be a staunch supporter.
Colin and I are way bigger Chris Thomas fans than Matt G is. For sure.
Well, I thought I invited Mel here to be the voice of reason and to keep everyone in line, but it turns out we were all very well behaved. So congratulations, everybody.
Yeah.
Great job.
Anything else from you and any other plugs we should put out there before we let these listeners, these very valuable listeners' ears go? Anything else we want to get their clicks on?
Nothing comes to mind for me. If there is, it's your job as a host to introduce it. So
more thing that I wanted to say.
Oh, go for it.
You guys should all seriously think about becoming Dom and Colin patrons. And I don't say that. Yeah. They haven't paid me to say that. I promise you, I would tell you if it was bad. They know Dom and Colin know this. I'm one of the most honest straight shooters you'll ever be in your life. I would tell you if there's no reason to do it. But the content they've been releasing that's patron only with BB10 stuff and now the Survivor Heroes vs. Villains stuff is just really fantastic. I think it's really well worth your $5 a month, and it's one of my favorite things with the Donald Kong podcast. Also, the discussion threads are, you know, as opposed to some other Patreon groups that I'm in, the discussion threads are tame yet really tame yet really, really people disagree strongly, and there's some fired takes out there. But people still kind of see each other's opinion no matter what. So I think it's, you know, it's a great opportunity that everyone should really think about.
Well, thank you very much, yeah. Charles. Yeah, for saying that and for being a patron and supporting the show. It really does mean a lot to us just to know that that at least you are getting you feel like you're getting what you want out of it.
I'm probably the only one, but I'll continue to push it. I'm back in the position of being myself against the world, but that's where I'm most comfortable. So. Absolutely. Everyone should definitely do it.
Yeah. And by the way, just for the record, in case anyone did want to go check that out, patreon.com/Dom and Colin is the place to go.
Absolutely. And also, if you want to get in touch with us about this, about that, or anything else, you can find us on Twitter at DomHRV, at Colin Stone, or you can email us domandcolin@gmail.com.
All right. That, I think, is going to do it. Thank you guys so much once again for
Thank
coming
you.
On with us,
Thank
Charles
you for
and Mel.
Us
yeah,
on.
Great stuff from both of you. Thank you guys for the listeners for making it this far. Enjoy next week's Survivor Maryland double episode. I'm sure we're going to be tweeting at the very least about that. And I would suspect somewhere along the way we're going to be doing some more Survivor Maryland All-Stars podcasting.
And watch the recap after Survivor Maryland airs.
Are you on it?
I may or may not be on that.
Me okay. too.
Ooh.
You might be.
Well, I guess we're on again. We're going to be on again together to talk about how amazing Chris Thomas is, no matter what happens this episode.
It's pretty much the Chris Thomas fan club, and we're going to spread the word. And it seems like it's spreading. It's catching fire. He is our Mockingjay.
That's awesome. All right. We'll definitely do check that out as well. Until then, I'm sure we will talk to you guys very soon. Take care, everybody.